We can take our seats. We've got to start, man. Hey, Jaglyn. Okay, folks, are we any apologies?
Sir Burns.
Andy Edmund.
Friday Hart.
Mr. Hart.
Did you hear that?
Mr. Hart.
Mr. Daly.
Burns.
I'm Burns.
Councilor Jones from Nate.
Councilor Jones from Nate, okay.
Okay, any declarations of interest? Declarations of interest, councillors? You can't hear me. Any declarations of interest, Glenn? Right, okay. So the action sheet arrived in the council meeting held on the 8th of May. I'll pass you over to Liam.
Chairman, a number of the actions are ongoing at the moment. I know there's a number of letters have been sent and we've still received correspondence back in regarding them. And there is actions back from a number of letters regarding those of motion which have been also tabled on the correspondence for tonight.
Councillor Riley?
Yeah. Chairman, it was just on the legal advice that we got back. Just a bit concerned that there does seem to be subjective comment on the actual case that's ongoing regarding the McCreesh Clay Park. And also I had wanted to know the amendment was voted on, but the amendment did not become a substantive motion and voted on. That was my main concern on the night, and that doesn't seem to have been addressed at all. But, Chairman, I'm just wondering, do we pay for the advices we get from Belfast City Council? Because a completely separate solicitor, maybe with some knowledge of local government, may be better to advise the council. Thank you.
Chairman, the decision we forwarded to Belfast City Council the verbatim detail of the meeting and also a copy of the minute of the meeting and advices onto it. The decision has been adjourned until we complete the work in regard to the consultation and the place strategy. So it's an adjournment. So that's why it isn't a substantive motion. The decision was adjourned. And Belfast Legal Services provide our legal advice. They're the solicitors for Belfast, for local government, for Belfast Legal Services. And, you know, we operate with them under a service level agreement in accordance with the legislation. And they have, I would argue, the best knowledge of local government law.
Okay.
Okay, we'll move on to item 4, the minutes of council meeting held on the 8th of May. For accuracy, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9, page 10, page 11, page 12, page 13, page 14. So, kind of a proposer and seconder, okay. Councillor Stokes and Councillor Craig. And item number 5, minutes of the special council meeting held on the 30th of April, again for accuracy. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, and the presentation. So, proposer and seconder for that practice. Councillor Hardy and Councillor Hall.
Any matters arising from those?
No,
thank you. So item 6, then, the minutes of the Enterprise, Regeneration and Tourism Committee, for again for accuracy. So page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9, page 10. Councillor Burgess, Councillor Stokes, and any matters arising from those? No, we'll move on to item 7, minutes of the Strategy, Policy and Resources Committee, held on the 17th of May. For accuracy again, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, and 6. So, proposer and seconder, Councillor Burgess, Councillor Hardy. Any matters arising from those?
Yeah, Chair, I had actually submitted an apology for that as I was celebrating my milestone birthday, so I had sent it to an officer, so if that could just be amended to reflect that.
With pleasure, Chairman.
happy birthday, Darren. Okay, move on to item 8, the minutes of the Active Healthy Communities Committee, held on the 21st of May. For accuracy, page 1. Page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8. Councillor Andrews and Councillor Walker. Any matters arising?
Yes.
Councillor Carr.
Chair, the VHC? Yeah.
Yes?
Yeah. I see in the proposal that was adopted that we're going to seek a meeting between Crossley Councillors, Community Centre for Warren Point Group and officials and PSNI Estate Section. Can I say that we have been dealing with PSNI Estate Section, and I think this maybe needs to be escalated a bit. Could I ask that we write to the Chief Constable and ask for a detailed explanation of how the PSNI have so badly let down the people of Warren Point, and not for the first time? I think we need to know whether it's realistic going forward. Going to wait till the end of Brexit, we're putting it back years. I do believe that we need to find out if there's an opportunity that this site can still be used in the future. Yay or nay?
Okay,
so I would ask that we write to the Chief Constable.
Can I get a seconder for that?
I'd say that, sure.
Okay. Everybody in agreement?
Yeah, Chair, thank you. It's under the landfill funding item where I see that it was proposed and seconded to withdraw the registration of the Downpatrick project and reallocate all the money. Has the club who's actually involved in that actually been informed that we're doing such an act? Because from my understanding, they're not. Have we communicated to them to make them aware that such is has been done?
Okay, Michael.
I'm not actually 100% sure if the club has been told. Having said that, it doesn't really matter. What we're doing here is we couldn't spend the money by the deadline, which was this summer, on Downpatrick. So we're simply moving it to Saintfield where we can spend it. The resultant underspend in Saintfield, which will be equal to the amount of money that we're taking from the Downpatrick scheme, will then be reallocated to the Downpatrick scheme. And I said that at the committee meeting.
Okay.
So the money, it doesn't make any difference. The money is still there for both schemes.
All right. That's all I wanted to confirm, that the money is still there then for the project. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Is that everyone? Yeah. So then, item 9, with minutes of the Regulatory Technical Services Committee. Again, for accuracy, page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8, page 9, page 10, page 11, page 12, and the presentation. Again, the opposer and seconder proposed were
Councillor Andrews.
Councillor Andrews and Councillor Cummins. Okay, any matters arising? Councillor Devlin.
Thank you, Chair. It relates to page 4 in terms of the car parking charges.
And whilst obviously St Patrick Clare Park wouldn't be in my DEA, but a lot of people who live in my DEA would be affected by it. I see that in the minutes here there's mention of a consultation at the end of the review. I'm just wondering what sort of form that consultation will take. Will it involve sort of the local residents who have been impacted, managers, other people parking out to their houses, and also would the local businesses be consulted, and what sort of form will that take?
Chairman, it's probably falls on the college access. I suppose we see it as a broad consultation with the Chambers of Commerce, with the various bid companies across the district. But certainly we can consult with as wide a group as we wish to consult with. Again, we consult with the DEA, you know, the DEA forums within the both council areas.
Okay, and again, it's not in my DEA, but even if we could do something online, could be good as well, because it's had a major impact on people.
Yes.
It's been voiced before, and you're well aware of that, but we ensure that consultation is very rigorous.
Yes, we can do that, Chairman.
Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Riley.
Yeah, Chairman, just I would like to point out that policy resources, or the strategy, policy and resources and technical a regulatory and technical services were two committees that I should legally be on, and I'm very disappointed that the council has voted or agreed that the system that discriminates against me has been kept in place, and I would like further legal advice taken on it, because we just were told that Belfast City Council legal department's probably the best in Northern Ireland, and yet they appear to have given completely different advice to us than what they give their own council management. So I think that's reasonable that I can request that.
It was resolved, that issue. They have given their legal opinion, and they're not.
The sisters
were here last night, and they could have answered your questions for you if you had been here. Well, you would have got the answers that you would have needed to have got, Henry, if you had been here. And it's very clear, and the examples that you have shown do not relate to the same to yourself. No. Okay. Well. Right. Well, we're moving on to our Councillor Sharvin.
Does the honourable member want me to give way to him?
No. Okay.
Chair, on the item that Councillor Devlin had raised around car parking, within Downpatrick we have seen a massive detriment to the actual income to the council for car parking, as car parks sit empty. I do acknowledge that in the minutes that some councillors state that this seems to be a positive for us and that it is working. I don't understand that comment at all. Where we have car parks sitting across our town, not generating revenue for us as a council to actually invest in our leisure centres, in our play parks, we're actually car parks, where one day I parked up and I was the only car actually parked there. You know, we have assets that are sitting empty unless we as a council are going to take a decision to get rid of these, which I think would be absolutely crazy. So why not make money as much as possible out of this? You know, the review states that it's a 6 month review, and that would be October. Surely the process of the review should start in September, with the outcome of the review being invoked in October. And I'd certainly suggest that we would look to start it in September rather than wait until October itself. People day and daily within Downpatrick are contacting me saying they can't park outside their own home because people that actually used to park in our car parks have been forced to park somewhere else because they can't actually afford to park in our own car parks anymore. You know, businesses within our town in Downpatrick are actually saying that footfall has dropped because of car parking prices. So where people are saying that this is working clearly aren't listening to the traders in Downpatrick. And actually, the 6 month review seems a wee bit far-fetched and a wee bit further out than I would have had hoped. Obviously, we agreed, or this council agreed at that point, to have 6 months review, but why can't we review it now? We've reviewed other things straight away. Things haven't worked and we've changed it. We had the speaking rights at planning committees changed because people didn't feel that it was the right decision. So why accept that this is the right decision? So why would we not review it now, actually listening to the people that actually are impacted by it? Maybe not if the other 40 councillors in this chamber park in a council car park and do actually feel the impact of it, or maybe they don't park in Downpatrick and don't care about Downpatrick, but I do. I'm very passionate about Downpatrick. So I actually would propose that we start the review now and actually consider, is this the right approach? Are the price changes the correct way? Are they impacting? Are they fair? Is there equality to across the board in our council district? So I'm happy to make that proposal that we carry the review now.
Okay, well, proposal there from Councillor Sharvin. Do somebody second that? Councillor Andrews second. Councillor McAteer?
Yeah,
sorry, everybody in agreement?
No.
No. Right, so go to a vote then?
Yeah.
Okay, so.
Who would I vote for? You've got to post and make an amendment to do it, so amendment to it. Next, possibly wants to speak on to it.
Yeah. Declan, do you want to speak on the car parking? Or?
No, or stay no. Just
look at Riva. I'll not. Okay. Okay, Councillor Clark.
Chair, I think it's the wrong time to be carrying out the review. For starters, we need to get the data and we need to get the evidence and see what income is being generated. This is hearsay, we're listening to here. So you can't make judgments in regards to that. Also, it has to be. You have to bear in mind that we've inherited the car parks from DRD, the former DRD. These car parks have to be kept. They have to be the tarmac, they have to get lighting, they have to have the shrubbery looked after and maintained. And it's just a continual, in my opinion, non-recognition of where the money's going to come to do this work. Is it going to come from the ordinary ratepayer, the person who's not driving? Are they going to pay to look after these car parks? So I think we should stay there 6 months and see what the information provides.
Okay, just for
the amendment.
Okay, so
proposal is that you begin the process immediately.
Okay, so a proposal that we begin this process immediately. So can we show our hands for those for it?
Against.
Okay, that's carried 20-13. Councillor McAteer, do you want to?
Just when I saw the senatories, it promoted something in my head just to ask an inquiry. Just the municipal assembly in Warren Point, the recent graveyard mass, the car park was closed opposite it. So I just wondered what the procedure is for that. Some constituents mentioned the fact that this was the case, but I'm not too sure whether there should have been a request for this or not. So maybe just someone looking into it. And just when I saw cemeteries there and charging, it a remark on.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, so Colleen will get back to you now. Not everybody? So there's the minutes of the audit committee held on the 26th of April. For accuracy, here. Yeah. So page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4, page 5, page 6, page 7, page 8. Proposal from Councillor Rohan, seconded by Councillor Sharvin. Okay, any other matters arising out of the audit committee? Okay, so correspondence in, everything hand you over to Liam.
Thank you,
Chairman, first item of correspondence is correspondence from the Northern Ireland Office regarding motion on clerical abuse. It's there for members. I say this is a devolved matter. Any question of public inquiry be for the devolved administration.
Councillor Kenley.
Chair, disappointing but not surprising that the content of the reply, Chair. I mean, Councillor Casey often referred over the past number of years to the Carisbrook room, and there seems to be an attempt here in the NAO, they obviously have won as well, to kick it into the Carisbrook room, never to come out again. But Chair, just let me say, there's a newfound confidence out there, Chairman, among victims of clerical and sexual and all forms of abuse, to seek the truth and to seek justice for historic wrongs that have been visited upon those people. And I think that we need to take the lead in this, Chair, and not just to be seen as a corporate body to be reacting to events as they do crop up from time to time. So these victims have waited long enough. So I wasn't aware of this thing about the interdepartmental body to look into clerical child abuse. But, you know, I suppose what I want to hear from Liam is what exactly are our options, and can we keep the fire lit under this, Chairman, to make sure that this gets the resolution that these people so dearly deserve, not only for the victims around our own particular area, but throughout the country. Thank you.
Can I, Chair, just concur with Councillor Tinley in relation to that? I'm just going to mention the fact that since this story broke on the Father Finnegan scandal, dozens of former students at St Colman's College have come forward to echo their concerns and their worries and the way that they were treated. So it seems sometimes like it's the tip of an iceberg. That once these things are revealed, then the whole thing comes loose. But if nothing's going to be done about it, then the whole stagger will sadly just be lost, and these people will feel completely alienated as a result. We know that, for instance, another priest was identified who was also abusing children in the Newry area in forms of Boy Scouts at St Joseph's Secondary School. So this person who is also deceased, he also needs to be investigated, and the people who he unfortunately attacked, that they should also be given that right, as along with the St Colman students and anybody else, of course, who has suffered such abuse in the past. It's too easy to pass the buck on this issue, and it's too important an issue, and we need to keep at it. If storm is not up and run, we have to find other ways and means of bringing this to the fore. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. And do you want it?
Chairman, I think the latter is self-explanatory. You know, it is a devolved matter. It's really up for the executive and, you know, members. There is no executive. And again, you know, we've written to the Northern Ireland Office, the Secretary of State, and the Under Secretary has written back to us. We can write back to the Secretary of State again in relation to the issue. But as it stands at the moment, I think I don't really see what other options we have. It's the exact same regarding a number of inquiries and public inquiries, and indeed, you know, the whole results of the commission that was set up into sexual abuse in public authorities. So I don't think there's much more, Chairman. We can do it at this point in time rather than keep it going.
Yeah, so we certainly don't want to dissuade people from coming forward and reporting this sort of crime. Councillor Tilly, did you want to come back in on that
yes,
again?
Yes, sure. Thank you for your indulgence. The interdepartmental working group, there is a suggestion in that reply that we contact them directly for an update on the progress of our work. So can we at least possibly do that, Liam?
Yeah,
yeah. We can make great for Permanent Secretary on that basis. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Next piece of correspondence, Chairman, is linked again in a letter from the Housing Executive regarding housing, a very detailed response in regard to
suppose, first of all, welcome on the council's a commitment to social housing. Indeed, you know, we have done a lot of work ourselves with the council with regard to our assets and a meeting with the housing executive on to it. And in terms of response, in terms of engagement on the development plan, it's also referred to the document. Second piece of correspondence then comes from the Department for Communities, which again looks at a review of the social housing issues. And again, the proposals close on the 21st of December after a 12-week consultation period. They're currently looking at the proposals and going to bring forward further proposals going forward. I haven't looked yet at the executive offices, at the civil service executive office. We're bringing forward programmes of work which were agreed by the previous administration, by the previous executive, and it may be that that's included, that proposals will come out from that there going forward. But Chairman, just members, any comments?
Yeah. Councillor Savage?
Yes, Chair. I welcome in particular the detail. I thank them for the correspondence that he sent to NAHE and in particular and then the department. And I welcome the detailed response we've got from the Housing Executive, and it's very clear from the response and the detailed response that they're keen to operate in a cross-cutting exercise with a joined-up approach to tackling the housing crisis in our city and district. And I believe that this is proof of the pudding that when the Council has taken the lead, particularly with the Housing Symposium, that good things and actions start to stem from it. I believe we've shown great leadership in organising the Housing Symposium, passing a unanimous motion on social housing in this chamber, and also carrying out the great work through Conor Mullen and others on the asset management review. I'm heartened by the DEA housing action plans that I believe were reported back this in September, but I think it's important when we get those DEA action plans coupled with the asset management information that we're now looking at within the council, that real responses and real solutions to our housing needs, particularly in our city where we have a chronic housing need, are identified, and that the opportunities that are there are prioritised, and that housing opportunities, particularly through our planning system, are prioritised in relation to social housing. But I welcome the response from the NAHE Chair, and I pay tribute to everybody on the council end who has pushed things forward over the last 9 months in particular. I think that we're now starting to see how joined up working and council taking the lead on these issues starts to pay dividends. But the real proof of the pudding will be how we see things moving forward in the autumn. Thanks, Chair.
Councillor Hyland.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Only one thing I agree and concur with Councillor Savage. It's good to see this project up and running. It's a completely necessary. The one thing that I'm unsure of is the figures that they've given us in recent times. I mean, the last quote that we got from the housing executive and meetings that we've had with them is that the housing need in Newry is between 800 and 1,000. If that's the case, then it's much higher than the one that's mentioned here, and it's also almost half, or indeed over half, of the needs of the whole council area, which again shows that, obviously speaking as a Newry councillor, I'm very interested in what happens there, but it does show you the figures themselves reflect the fact that there is a very, very strong and pressing need for social housing in the city of Newry.
Chair, I welcome the response also, and it does show you a bit of joined up thinking, a bit of cohesion through the community planning process. I think they are recognising, as Councillor Savage says, that we are taking the lead and they're buying it. In regards to the Newcastle, my own area, the surrounding area, 187 units. That doesn't even touch the real dire need that's out there, because people have given up waiting on the housing executive waiting list, and they went into private renting, and obviously they're not presenting now as a need. This was a chronic need for housing right across the board. People can't even get private rent in Newcastle now either. So there is a chronic need, and my worry, and I've had it out with the planning guys in regards to the area plan, is that there's no land left to build in Newcastle. There's no land available. It's all been either in the process of getting built or it has been built. So, and we don't have, in regards to the asset summary or the asset management process, there's very little assets in council ownership or in any other statutory body in regards to that can be used for housing. You know, so I think we have to maybe write back, I propose we write back the housing executive and quite clearly identify Newcastle as a real problem area and how we're going to solve that problem.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Just obviously, we'd acknowledge the need in Ewing, and also Willie has touched on Newcastle, but Orrin Point is just every bit as in need of social housing. The situation at this moment in time is absolutely dire. There is no turnover of any type of social housing in the town. And I think what we need to be doing as a council is we need to champion for all our areas within the district that are in dire need of housing. Councillor Casey.
The reality is actually worse than that. As someone who sits on the Housing Council, it's clearly evident that the housing executive staff is reducing all the time, and the amount of money that they would like to get to invest in their current staff to make it even fit for the habitation, it's a scary factor. The reduction in the block grant is causing all manner of problems with the housing executive being an arm's length body, and there's a debate around now to try and get an ability for the housing sector to revert back to being able to build houses. Now, the reality is as well, the issue is identifying sites even in public or private ownership, and it's normally housing associations who develop those, and they are able to increase their rents by 2% every year without, you know, any justification, I would think, whereas there's a moratorium on rent increase with the housing executive, it makes it a wee bit easier for their tenants to be able to live. But the fact is, as I said at the start of my delivery there, they're not able to invest in their staff. And if it keeps on, current trends keep the way they are, even the staff that they have will become that unfit for habitation that they will not be able to be let for tenants. So the situation is becoming critical, sir.
Thank you. Mr. Andrews.
Thanks very much. I do concur with the previous speakers in relation to chronic housing shortage, and the chronic housing shortage knows no boundaries, you know, especially in the only area for Welland. You know, there's a waiting list as long as your arm for people to be housed under housing status. And I know in the own village of Crossgar, the Clan Mill are due to start a scheme shortly, which is long overdue and welcomed. You know, I think in the early days of the Conservative government, when the right to buy scheme was encouraged and people took up the offer of buying their own homes, the housing executive at the time did not follow up by building replacement stock, and hence we're in a chronic shortage today. But I do welcome every effort possible to ensure that housing needs are identified and dealt with as a matter of priority through in our area.
Councillor Quinn.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I would agree with all that has been said by the previous speakers. It's just the fact that the housing associations are not living up to the mark. When private developers can go into the areas and find land to buy and develop in the housing, and people are being forced into going to the private developers to rent properties, this is putting their children and their families further into the poverty trap. And if there's any way we could find out just how much in resources the housing associations are sitting on that they're not using to buy up some land and build houses. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Liam, when do we next? Sorry, Councillor Burgess.
Yes, I would concur with all that was being said there, and especially what Councillor Casey said. There is some houses within their stock. It is beginning to get into a dilapidated state. And there is houses that they actually own that are now boarded up. And if they would just maybe take a re-look at how they invest their money and maybe try to look for getting some funding to get those reallocated to people, especially within the Rallin area. There's quite a few and in the own area there at the moment now you've started boarding them up and not renovating them.
Okay, thank you. Now, when do we next have the housing executive in?
The housing executive, I think, is in. I get the details for you, but I think they're in end of August or the end of September. It's certainly in that period. You normally have them in early autumn. Have you got it there, sir? Do you? Yeah. We'll come back. I think it's normally either August or September.
Right. Maybe we need to look at getting them in as early as possible, with the feeling that's around the chamber.
Yeah. They have an annual consultation. I suppose our next meeting will be July. I'll check that out. And again, September is it? Yeah, end of September.
Okay. With a proposal from Councillor Clark.
didn't we?
It's just right to House of Sackers, you know, outlining the chronic need in the Newcastle area, and the point I'm making is it is different from other areas because there is no land available. And I think council and the housing executive need to recognise that and sit down and look at it in more detail.
Okay, do I have a second? Yeah, Chairman, maybe I follow up that there, that there is a package of councils that a number of other councillors made points of, if you're happy enough. I'll reply back to the letter, say I reckon that, and we're speaking to them in the September meeting, and maybe they'll come along with some suggestions of how we could deal with issues around them particular areas. Yeah. We can pick it off the minutes, so that's good enough.
Sorry, Chair, can we find out what the resources are the housing associations have sitting at their disposal that they're not using?
Yeah. But again, Chairman, we can add that to the correspondence. You mean resources as in cash?
The housing associations are amenable to being approached with and being told about pockets of land that's available. So if you know of anywhere that you can contact them.
Sorry, Chair, they've been using that for a very long time now as a cop out. There is land being sold regularly and the private developers are buying it. They want land, but they want land for nothing.
Not my understanding.
Just on that, the reason being, I take on board what Councillor Quinn's saying, housing associations can only give the going rate. Private developers can come in and give what they want. If someone's selling land and he wants to sell it 20%, 30% above the going rate, your private developers that span it, because housing associations is using taxpayers' money, they can only go with the going rate. That's why. That's where your problem lies.
Okay, folks, we'll move on from that. With the community planning event for wellbeing and network, or sorry, community planning and wellbeing network event on the 21st of June from NILGA. So can we get agreement on who's going to go to that? Okay, a proposal for NILGA members.
Again, it's free, Chairman. It's free to all members. It's a networking event, so if any member wanted to go to it, it doesn't cost us anything. So it's only a half-day networking event. You know,
But do we need to inform somebody before you go?
I'll check out NILGA. Maybe one that they don't need. Do they need details? Well,
okay.
Yeah. So maybe if somebody can before the end of the week. Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
The next item then, Chairman, is the NILGA Annual Conference and Award Ceremony.
Chair, could I propose that NILGA members go to that, plus the award ceremony? And I do hope that this council nominates this year and puts in nominations to it. Last year, NILGA members were less spent like Brown's cows when it come to the awards ceremony at the end of the night or in the evening time. So I make a proposal that any member that sits in NILGA, if they want to go, they let Sarah know or some of the council officials know and we go as a council. So we do. Because it was embarrassing last year. So it was.
Do we have a seconder for that? Councillor Andrews?
Is it a gala dinner again?
It's a cost to that one, yeah.
Yeah. Right, so if any member can attend the day event on the
cost of the dinner?
The dinner then is
for the whole afternoon. Well. Don't see it here.
No.
Chairman, I get more details. We'll take the proposal that any NILGA member can go to it, and then we can follow that up, Chairman. Yeah, I can do this. The last event is a community safety event for the 29th. So the 1st of July is an NAC summer conference in the Royal Clifton South Park. Again, it's regarding community safety, hate crime and domestic abuse. And it's, again, the cost is £250 plus that, plus flights and accommodation, Chairman.
Jill, sorry.
Yeah, no, just obviously based on the community safety aspect of that conference, could I propose the chair for the PCSP attend that?
Chair, can I second that?
Okay, is everybody in agreement with that? Yes? No?
Yeah.
No, nobody's in. No. Thank you, Shane. That moves us on to notice of motion. With a request from some councillors that if we can bring the notice of motion from Councillor Brown forward to be the second notice. So if we get agreement from the room, we can do that. Because some members will have to leave early and they want to take part in it. It's the last one from Councillor Brown. Well, it's up to yourself if you want.
Yeah, I know that some party members, supporters of this motion, are from the Boston.
Right, well, if that's the case, then we'll go with the running order then. Okay, so the first motion then is from Councillor Andrews.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'd just like to read the motion as follows. On the 45th anniversary of his election in May 1973, that Newry Mourne and Down District Council would like to pay tribute to Councillor Dermot Kern for his many years of dedicated service to the community and successive councils. Mr. Chairperson, 45 years ago, a very young, fresh-faced Dermot Kern was elected to council for the first time ever. And over 11 elections later, and across two local authorities, and since the reform of local government in 1972, is with us this evening and has witnessed many changes over 45 years. Looking back on your career and many years of dedicated public service to the people, you have fought many campaigns on many fronts, like playing a major role along with others in fighting the battle for a new Down hospital. You were dedicated very much so to the young people, and for many years the Dermot Kern Young Achievers Awards were sought after, and many who participated, these served as a launching pad to be successful in their own lines of business and further in their careers. With his wealth of experience behind him, he continues to champion for investment in the area, roads and infrastructure, and for public sector jobs, bases to be retained and enhanced, and also lobbying for more job creation and attracting of companies and firms to set up in our area. Dermot, in his many years of service as a public representative, has shown dedication to his constituents, serving as chairperson of Down District Council, and acting as an ambassador for the council and showcasing the area on his travels, be it local or abroad, and playing a key part and contributing to the committees and outside bodies such as NILGA, which is his pride and joy, and where he's soon to be appointed president, also the NIC. And the above remarks are a small snippet of the life and times so far of Dermot Kern. On a personal basis, I have known Dermot for many years. I bought my first record in his shop, the Manchester Midland in 1978, which he managed at the time. And at a recent boxing match in Kildare, he was my manager. And, you know, whenever I was questioned on the boxing ring, was it true that I ate two face suppers every day? I commented, yes. The first was brilliant, the second was fantastic, and I had a taste of the roll on a Friday. And in relation to that remark, Dermot says it's good that I was supporting the local fishing industry. I'll not go into the morning about the scones, Dermot, but I would like to class you as a personal friend, an advisor and sounding board, and today is a great day for Dermot. Family and colleagues have reached another significant milestone in his role as councillor.
Chair, could I second Terry's motion and say I first met Dermot Kern 10 years ago. We both served on a number of the committees that the Department of the Environment set up to oversee the reform of local government and the RPA, the reform of public administration. And I think Dermot would join me and we apologise on how that has turned out, but we still hope it'll work its way out. And I think the 45 odd million they said it would save will have, in 50 years, will eventually get there. Chair, I think I would look forward certainly to Dermot's 50th. I hope to see him here in, for his 50th anniversary. And I just finally say, Chair, I reassure members that I won't be here in 45 years, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Burgess.
Yeah, we in the Ulster Unionist Party are delighted to support this notice of motion. It's been a long time coming. But Dermot, you have served the community well for an absolute lifetime, two lifetimes. For I have been here for a lifetime, 20 odd years with you, Dermot. And I value your help and support many, many times. And it doesn't matter who you are, what you are, or where you come from. If you ask Dermot Corn for help and support, you'll get it. But one thing I seem to see about Dermot, he never gets cross. I don't know how he can hold his cool as well. Dermot, you're an absolute gentleman, and this has been too long in coming, and we are delighted to support you.
Councillor Walker.
Chair, thank you very much. And our party is also supporting the motion. Dermot, I've known you for 13 years now, from I got elected in 2005. I've sat on the Tri Fisheries with you. You're a great champion. I know that for the fishermen. I know you're a great champion for economic development in the area. Me and yourself had meetings in relation to the possibility of a hotel in Downpatrick, and of course the thing is the planners had shot that out of the water. But you do represent your people. You represent everybody within your area. So you do. And we as a council grouping have the utmost respect for you. So we do, and we enjoy working with you. And as Councillor Burgess said, I've never heard you saying a cross word in my 13 years, only when Terry went to lift the scones in the old council chamber that time. But Dermot, as Councillor Stokes has said, I hope you're here for your 50th. So you are. And maybe with the chairman's indulgence, on behalf of my group, and chair, is it okay I make a wee presentation to him? If you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead. Check the bottom. Councillor Clark.
I don't know how to follow that. I think Mickey Ron's way to get ours. Yeah, I took a beamer. I concur with all the other comments. Dermot's made a massive contribution to this community and this council. He's a strong advocate for promoting local business, tourism and fishing. And other, Mr. Nelga as well. But he's a great knowledge for the local community and highly respected by all political groupings and by the community in general. The thing that maybe marks Dermot out is in regards to when an RPA had an opportunity to get a sizable amount of money, compensation, to retire, and he didn't take it, and he stayed in local government. And I think that's testament to the man. And in regards to his partner, his wife, Karen, he couldn't, and family, he couldn't have done anything without them and their support. And the public in general keep endorsing me, Dermot, at the ballot box. So you're obviously doing something right.
Thank you. Thank
you, Chair. I wasn't planning to speak because I know Dermot doesn't like people talking about him in such kind ways. But what I would just like to say is obviously 45 years is a great testament to Dermot, and I'm sure going into the next election he will continue to serve his community, and I'm sure the 50 years milestone is certainly within sight, and will always stand and serve and be passionate about the community he lives in and for the community he represents.
Councillor Brown, did you get a microphone to work?
I did. I borrowed my my colleague on the left here, so I'll struggle along with that. Dermot, just on behalf of the Alliance and the Independent grouping, just to say congratulations on your anniversary. 45 years is an incredible achievement. Even more incredible when I reflect on the fact that I've only been alive for 26 of those 45 years. It really puts it into perspective that almost twice as long as I've been alive, you've been in public service, which I think is an incredible testament to your character and your long period of service. I've always found you to be a real gentleman, to be a hard-working councillor and a very canny businessman as well. So absolutely, here's to 5 more years, Councillor Curran. That's set an unbreakable record.
Okay, and just before you respond, Councillor Curran, keep the light on. I would like to add my thanks for the advice, guidance and support that you've given me in my short time in the council, and it's my intention that we will have a recognition event to mark the milestone of being the longest serving councillor in the north of Ireland.
Chairman, before Dermot comes in here, I think on behalf of the officers, it would be remiss of us not to say that it's a pleasure working with Dermot Curran. He's advice, his sage advice as an elder statesman within politics within this area has been very valuable to me from coming to this area. Indeed, I know worked with Dermot for a long time before in Nilgan, my time in Barnbridge, and again, I value him as a friend and a colleague, and I look forward to many further years working along with him.
And over to the man of the moment.
Mr. Chairman, all I want to say is a few words, because I must say tonight has been a very humbling night for me. I tell you, honestly, believe it or not, I'm nearly just in there. Well, I'm not getting tears, but I'm not very far away from it, because, you know, I listened to the comments that were passed here tonight. It's been unbelievable. But first of all, I would like to thank Councillor Andrews for bringing it, for all of his kind remarks too, well, especially those of my council colleagues. I do appreciate what you said tonight, and I do know that you mean it with it. So I'm humble in listening to your remarks. Public service has been a big part of my life. 45 years is a long time in the role, and throughout this time, I have worked with all political parties for the benefit of the people of the council district, and I will continue to do that. I have learned a lot during those years, but I would like to also thank for this opportunity the officers and staff of the former Down District Council and the new Newry and Mourne and Down District Council. I want to thank those officers for all the assistance that they gave to me in the past, and indeed was very valuable, and I much appreciated it. But I also want to thank too the local press, who have helped me promoting many of my crusades, and there were many I can tell you this, but I must say without the press too, I couldn't have got across to the people that I wanted to get across. So I want to thank them very much, sir. I feel very privileged to have been, as God's servant said, I feel very privileged to have been able to work for the people in our district. And I would especially like to thank all those people who have come out to vote me over those many years. And I'm thinking about it now, it was a privilege to have worked in all the fields that have been mentioned here tonight. And indeed, I know the rest of you, my colleagues, have similar aspirations and will probably do the same thing. Time has come out all these years. Times are different in the new council, especially with some exciting and challenging times ahead. And I look forward to contributing to the good future that lies for this council. And I'd ask all my other colleague councillors to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you, Dermot. Terry, do you want to sum up there?
Yes, I do, Chairperson. I would like to thank everybody present for their kind words and contributions. The late Eddie McGrady encouraged Dermot to become involved in politics in the early days of the SDLP and to run for council. under the banner as a man of the people, for the people. After 11 elections, that has clearly stood him in good stead, establishing, as we all know, an excellent reputation amongst his colleagues and for his cross-community approach to politics. This evening, Dermot now is the record bits on Select Club as the longest-serving councillor, and he's got two other councillors who will be keeping an eye on him as councillors Jim Dillon and Jim Spears, and they're not too far behind. They've clocked up over 40 years apiece. Again, well done, Dermot. To Karen and family and to colleagues and friends, well done and congratulations on achieving an excellent record and reaching a very important milestone, and I wish you all the best in the future. Good luck.
I take it everybody's in agreement with the motion. We'll move on to the next motion then. It's a motion of motion received from Councillor Hammett.
Chair, I'll read the notice of motion so well. That this council, that Newry Morning Down Council is failing to fulfil its quality and good relations duties in the policy, development and funding programmes to support cultural expression, in particular the variety of expressions of reticence receiving minimal or non-mainstream expenditure from the council. The council commits to commissioning an independent review of its support for Britishness and associated cultural expressions in the council area, and an action plan to redress this imbalance and mainstream support for such expression. Chair, we are bringing this to DGP Griffin is bringing this motion to council as we believe this council has failed to in fulfilling its duties towards equality and good relations. The policy development and funding that is embedded in the main council budget for programmes which supports cultural expression and endeavour is targeted towards only one submission to the disadvantage of all others. The majority of councillors have chosen to not support in the main council budget any expression of Britishness or any other section of the community, leaving funding for any other identity other than Irish is minimal and coming from non-mainstream council funding sources, which is uncertain. All we want is a rebalancing of the main council budget to demonstrate fairness in this council area, and a fund of money is set aside in the main council budget to guarantee money is available for cultural events and identities other than Irish. This council has chosen to support the Irish Lions to the value of up to £500,000, £400,000 to £500,000 in this council term. By doing this, the council is promoting the Irish identity over all others. This council area at the last census in 2011 has a population of approximately 171,000. People that identify themselves as Irish is 44%. People that identify themselves as British is 28%, and those who identify themselves as Northern Irish is 30%. A person's identity is very important and can be defined in many ways. I believe there are two main characteristics with a person's identity. Those are political and social views mainly. Political views in Northern Ireland, this determines if you see yourself as Irish, British or other. What this council has chosen to do by choosing to fund one language and identity over all others is an equality issue. I know parties will say Irish language and identity is for all, but so is the British language and identity and other identities. With this motion, we are asking for fairness and a fair slice of the cake. Promoting the Irish has approximately received £500,000, £400,000 to £500,000, but I would believe at least 28% of this fund of money, which is about £140,000. This is approximately £35,000 per year. This money should be put in a fund to support minority communities in this council area for the minority community development and events. In this motion, is proposing the council commits to commissioning an independent review of its support for Britishness and other identities associated cultural expressions in the council area, and an action plan to redress this imbalance and mainstream support for such an expression. I would encourage all councillors to support this motion as a way forward for this council to create equality and respect for all the citizens in this council area. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
I propose that motion.
Councillor Walker, are you seconding the
Chair,
motion?
Chair, I would just like to second the motion, and Councillor Hannah has put it across well in relation to funding for minority groups within this council. And all I would say is, all we are asking for is a bit of equality here when it comes to funding in relation to cultural events. So we are. And I don't think it's much to ask for within this council. You know, when you're a minority person, whether you be a unionist or whatever, outside looking in, it looks very, very grim, so it does. And it makes grim reading, so it does. And we're only asking for a bit of equality and respect. So I second the motion.
Councillor Savage.
Chair, I would like to propose an amendment to Councillor Hannah's motion, if possible. While I appreciate the sentiment of what Councillor Hannah's advocating this evening, I cannot support the wording of the original motion, as it makes accusations relating to this council that I and my party do not believe to be a true reflection of how this council operates and funds projects and expressions of cultural expressions of culture across the district. However, as a constitutional nationalist and republican in the true sense of the word, in that I believe in creating a new Ireland where the British identity is an integral part, an equal part of our society, and is to be celebrated along with other minority cultures on this island, I am sympathetic to the concerns of our unionist colleagues that they may have, whether justified or not, in relation to opportunities to express their culture and British identity. Chair, in remaining true to the new Ireland that the SDLP aspires to and is working towards, I believe this council has nothing to fear in ensuring that we listen to the concerns of the unionist community in this district, as well as those of other minority communities, and take those concerns on board and take whatever steps are required to reassure the unionist community and indeed our growing ethnic minority communities that they are cornerstones of the rich cultural fabric of this district, a cultural fabric which must be acclaimed and celebrated in a respectful and tradition-honoured way. Chair, in recognising the sentiment of Councillor Hannah's motion, I propose an amendment which seeks to lay any potential concerns the unionist community and any other minority community may have in this district in relation to expressions of their culture and identity, and also reaffirms this Council's long-standing and unwavering commitment to its policy of equality and respect. Chair, I propose the following amendment. This Council acknowledges the need to ensure that all minority communities in this district, including the unionist community, feel that their culture, tradition and identity is fully respected and celebrated, and that a fair share of funding is allocated to support all cultural expressions across the district. This Council agrees to set up a working group reporting to the Council's Good Relations Committee and Audit Committee to address the concerns of minority communities and report back to the Council with recommendations on any need to enhance opportunities for cultural expression for minorities across the district. Chair, I propose the amendment.
Councillor Hannah, are you proposed, or are you prepared to accept the amendment?
Sure. We will accept the amendment to all, but I'll sum up at the last.
Yeah, one. That's okay. Thank you.
Go on, Margaret Carla.
Go ahead.
Yeah, to say that the council is failing to fulfil its equality and good relations duties is a bit of an insult. It's a serious allegation. Equality screening is carried out on policies and decisions. And we see that every monthly meeting we attend. Equality and Good Relations Department should be commended for the sterling work that they do. The councillor and his party were happy enough with the screening of every decision regarding the Irish language strategy and the bilingualism strategy. So why the sudden departure? We all know what it feels like to have your cultural heritage diminished and or disrespected. I agree with a lot of what the former councillor said there. And as a member of the Irish language community, which would be a minority community within this district as well, I can share with some of the frustrations of the councillor. He mentioned something about one language being funded to the detriment of all. Although we're only speaking in one language here. There's no language being given more right or more power over another language. There's a... You know, what are the cultural events that are so badly needed to be funded that aren't getting funded? And if they're not getting funded, if there are fantastic cultural events being proposed and being funding being applied to them, and why are they not getting the funding? That's a question that has to be answered. Maybe just the councillor should contact some of the Irish language groups for they seem to have no such difficulties securing funding for child-friendly events up and down the district in the last few years. We in Sinn Féin support cultural equality, and we would expect that all residents would be confident and proud of their cultural heritage. And I formally request that officers go away and look at these allegations and carry out an equality impact assessment to ensure that no community feels that their culture is being in any way eroded or disrespected. From
David
Taylor.
Chair, thank you. On behalf of the Ulster Municipality Group, we are very happy to support the motion and the subsequent amendment that has been accepted by Councillor Hannah. This has been an issue which myself and other unionist colleagues have raised with senior officials over a period of time during the lifetime of this council. And it has been one where we felt there has been a lack of progress and maybe a lack of desire to actually make any movement on it. So any recognition, you know, and any support that we do get, we would be very grateful for it. But we certainly feel that we don't get the recognition of the culture that's deserved. And to certainly instill any confidence within the unionist community in terms of the fact that they're respected and they're wanted within this council area, it's important that the local government authority does recognise that aspect of culture and does offer its support in the same manner that other cultures are offered similar support. So I think it's important that we do move forward with the issue, that we do have a discussion about it and bring forward proposals that would address the concerns of not only my cultural aspect and the cultural aspect of my community, but others, to ensure that everyone is getting a fair and balanced treatment within this council area. So on behalf of the group, as I say, we are very happy to support the motion and indeed the amendment that has been accepted by Councillor Hannah, and hope that the council as a collective body can do that also. Thank you.
Mr. McMurray.
Thank you, Chair. We would support the amendment as proposed. We would have had initial concerns about the original wording of it, but I think that's been fleshed out in regards looking at the working group, looking at the equality and good relations, which is somewhere where I thought this should have perhaps been put to first. But I suppose really, I mean, I sort of, on reading this motion, I wanted to check whether my cultural Britishness was impinged on a daily basis, and I couldn't quite find that it was. Given I can listen to the Today programme on Radio 4, I'm able to buy a copy of The Guardian, I can read The Private Eye, which increasingly features stories with the UP representatives at Westminster. And finally, checking my sock drawer, checked my passport, Great Britain, Northern Ireland, and it's still valid. There are, however, parts of Britishness which are curtailed, such as laws surrounding libel, licensed premises opening hours, the language in which I'm able to read the BBC website in, the issue of marriage equality, abortion laws, which we'll discuss later. There are others. These are issues affecting communities of British people on this corner of our island, but are out of step with British associates on the Big Island, William Moore, if you will. However, this is personal to me, and it may not be what the motion being brought forward is intending. So, the initial concerns have been addressed, and I suppose really what I would like to sort of go on now really is that this motion originally portrayed a perceived notion among some of those within the PUL of an insensitivity in this council toward them. And in this regard, by simply attributing more money to one side or the other, would possibly not remedy this. Therefore, I mean, I am conscious of this. I remind other councillors to be conscious of this. There are communities that exist cheek by jowl within this society, and this can only happen with the shelter afforded to them by the other. So happy to support the motion as amended.
Councillor Riley, just before you come in there, can I remind you that we're discussing now the amended motion? So, you know, we don't need to go through the good relations and the quality stuff. Go ahead, Henry.
Thanks, Chairman. I welcome the motion. It is a timely motion, and I heard what the Sinn Féin party said, that they see no evidence really of this need. But there is a need, and in the previous Neary and Mourne Council, there was a committee set up with cross-party support called the Ulster Scots Committee, and it was hugely successful. It didn't have massive attendances at their meetings, but the effect that it had on the psychological aspect of people who lived in areas like Mourne, that, you know, the council are actually starting to recognise our cultures and traditions, and that we're, you know, a bona fide part of this community. And if you take the language of Ullans and other aspects of it, it has been neglected in this area. There's no question about that. We have only one organisation, the Schomburg Society in Kilkeel, that is actually fostering and propagating the culture in a very, very constructive fashion. And yet there are other groups and areas within our district that would like to emulate what the Schomburg Society have done, but they can't, and they cannot get the funding. The Ulster Scots Agency can help after a fashion, but it is actually, a lot of people feel it's distant, and the rules and regulations that they work to just do not seem to add up at times. One example would be the pipes. The Cullinan pipes are regarded as Irish, and they can't get funded, but yet the Scotch pipes can, even though the Cullinan pipe, it's not the Cullinan pipe, it's known as long.
Brian Brew
pipe, whatever it is actually well known and used within the Ulster Scots community. And so I welcome the proposal, and I think it would really help to improve the perception of this council among a big section of the community if they were showing that wee bit of help and respect. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I've approached Councillor Hannah's motion with an open mind, but I will point out, similar to the comments made by my erstwhile colleague to my right, that he has failed to give an adequate definition of what Britishness actually entails. I would contend that Britishness and its cultural expression is a lot more than Councillor Hannah and his colleagues may want to see funded in this area. What events and aspects of Britishness is he talking about specifically? I would contend that inclusiveness and multiculturalism is as much an inherent part of British identity as anything else. So I would ask the DUP, why call for more funding for British projects when your own party can't even support British laws on issues like women's rights, LGBT rights and political donation transparency? I would encourage the DUP to reflect on what it actually means to be British. But I do thank Councillor Savage for his balanced amendment, which I will support, and I commend Councillor Hannah for at least accepting it.
Sorry, Councillor Maggot here.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Reading the original motion, I just hope that the motion is genuinely made and not simply mischievous. And if it is made genuinely, you know, it's a very badly researched motion. In that there's absolutely no evidence.
But we're discussing the amendment now, Dad.
Yes, I know that, but we still can't lose sight of what was said here. You know, and I did notice that the councillor, he mentioned Irish 8 times, and he mentioned British twice in his own speech. So, like, I just hope he isn't being anti-Irish. But I will, however, support the motion, the amendment.
Amen.
I admit. What's that? Sorry.
Thank you.
Ireland. Thanks, sir. Forgive me for being sceptical on this, but I think we must be coming close to an election, you know what, when such motions come to the fore and when such allegations are being made that this council is actively discriminating against a section of its own community. That's what it's basically saying. And it's a terrible thing to say without any proof. It all seems to reside on funding and equality of funding. And yet we have been shown statistics that show that funding applications were made on behalf of the unionist community, but unfortunately the funding applications weren't properly administered. If they had been done so, there would have been no problem in getting them through. But there's a fundamental... Henry made the point there that the Ulster Scots was a forum that they could have used. I mean, I attended Irish language meetings because... And on the same night, Ulster Scots had their meetings in the same centre, in the Arts Centre in Newry. It was disappointing, to say the least, to see the numbers who attended. Most nights there was barely a forum there, so I don't know what the good psychological input that they got from it, but it was necessary as necessary, and maybe it should be re-examined again. The difficulty I have with the amendment from the SDLP is that they're almost suggesting that there is an investigation required here in some way. To see is this allegation worthy or not?
we have an equality and good relations forum, and surely that's the mechanism that we should be using. That's the way we should be going forward, rather than creating another independent working group or another independent body to, I think, investigate very little, because I don't think there is much to investigate.
Councillor Clark.
Thanks, Chair. Sinn Féin will be supporting the amendment. We weren't content with the motion as presented by Councillor Hannah. Just to say, on the back of what Councillor Hyland said as well, I think a working group is a useful exercise to engage with ethnic minorities as well as minorities. I think there's an opportunity to do that with a new vice chair originally from Ukraine. Could have a role to play in regards to that. I think it's always very important to protect minorities in all walks of life. So I'm not fearful in regards to doing that and setting up that working group to do that piece of work. If people are saying that they're genuine concerns, then as majority parties, there's an onus on us to listen to them concerns and see if there is issues or if there is capacity issues or stumbling blocks, then we need to be able to assist them groups in regards to funding. But the grants and the funding are open to all groups, regardless of what persuasion you come from. It's an equal process for everybody. And there's a number of groups on the perceived national side who would not get funding as well. And it's down to the application. As councillors, we don't even get sight of the applications. We don't even see who the groups are until they're scored and processed through the council. And that's to ensure that there's no interference in the process. That's what it's designed to do. That a majority party could maybe use influence. That's what it's designed to do. I think there's a danger. See, when we're talking in the chamber, and I'm always very mindful of this, that what we say in the chamber here, it ripples down into the communities. And if you keep saying something long enough, they start believing what you're saying. That there is no discrimination in this council against any grouping. And from Sinn Féin's point of view, we certainly wouldn't be supporting anything that discriminated against anybody. But as Councillor Brown talked about, there is discrimination in society against the LGBT community, Irish speakers, same-sex marriage. You know, when we talk about Britishness and Ulster Britishness, my Irish identity has no place in that. There doesn't seem to be space or room for me. Your party leader, Arlene Foster, said it was multiculturalism, unionism was. Ask the minorities about that. They'll give you a certainly different answer in regards to that. That version of Britishness, as I say, cannot even bring itself to legislate for Irish language, unlike, ironically, those in Britain who have done so for the Scots Gaelic and the Welsh languages, and marriage equality. That's another British example which doesn't fit Ulster Britishness. And again, another bit of a spin is in regards to there's a cultural war. There's a modern day orange card being played by unionist extremists. It reinforces communal division, it fuels sectarianism, and it does a massive disservice to those who cherish the orange or the Ulster Scots traditions or who claim a British identity here. And you certainly have to be mindful again that, as I said again, I think it's a slight on the officers by saying that there's a discrimination going across the council in regards to the Britishness or the unionist minority. And as I say, I don't believe that is true in any way. It was mentioned about the Schoenberg Society in Kilkeel. It's doing magnificent work in Kilkeel. It's looking at also Scots. It's eradicated bonfire issues that were in Kilkeel. It's looking at dance and music and also Scots heritage. And that, in my opinion, is a template. And I can't see how council wouldn't be funding such groups if they were setting up in other areas. We've contentious bonfires in other areas. A group like that would be of assistance, I would see it. So And I spend a lot of my time doing union outreach, working with different organisations on a continual basis. And there's not a big of a bone in my body in regards to talking to the unions community or whatever. And I'm sure anything that we can do to assist groups and looking at fun, we will work together in partnership. There's peace money available at the minute. So there's opportunities to work together. But I think by continually sort of saying that the union community has been discriminated against, I don't think it's helpful. But we support the amendment.
Just to clarify, Chair, I did make it very clear in my first paragraph when I did speak in relation to the fact that our party were very much of the opinion that what was said in the original motion was not a true reflection. I wanted to make that very clear in case any of our members missed that. But Chair, the amendment reads, "This council acknowledges the need to ensure that all minority communities in this district, including the unionist community, feel that their culture, tradition and identity is fully respected and celebrated, and that a fair share of funding is allocated to support all cultural expressions across the district. This council agrees to set up a working group reporting to the council's Good Relations Committee and Audit Committee to address the concerns of minority communities and report back to council with recommendations on any need to enhance opportunities of cultural expression for minorities across the district."
Chairman, just maybe for an officer's point of view, taking this forward, the Quality and Good Relations Working Group contains representatives of every party on the council. So I'm conscious, would it be useful to actually have it as a working group, since it involves every party, as opposed to starting in our working group? If maybe, maybe.
Chair, I have no objection to that if the proposal of the motion has.
Okay.
Yep.
Chair, we would be happy enough for that, so we would. Just to sum up on this here, the reason I brought the motion so was it was to highlight the feelings of the British, the people that choose to identify themselves as British. I'm pretty horrified at how little understanding, especially Sinn Féin, has for the unionist community. Anybody identifies them as British, they have no understanding. I listened to a load of waffle from Wally Clark there, sir, that, and it's nothing but waffles that it was. That's all it was. It was waffle. And words. The community I come from at this moment in time, they feel that this council does not really represent them or highlight them in any way. When it comes to funding, the only money for any identity in this council is ours. Now, what I'm saying is this. The only money that is embedded in the council funds is towards ours. Well, put it this way, you can show me where it's different, but at this moment in time, any monies that the unionist community or the Protestant community or the British identity has to seek is through voluntary contributions or anything like that, so this, or through a funding stream like that. Now, to be quite honest with you, I am delighted that Michael here has brought this forward, so that there is some empathy within that section of the community towards us in the unionist community. At this moment in time, we do not feel, and especially Sinn Féin, I'm really disappointed in them. They have no understandings that they haven't of how we and the unionist community feel. None whatsoever. Shut your mouth. I never got it any new.
Order, please.
No, but I didn't butt in on him. I didn't butt in on him. And as well as that too, as for Councillor Brown, to be quite honest with you, there's no way I'm going to take a lecture from somebody that's been convicted of what you've been convicted of. There's no way I'm going to take a lecture from you. And no way I'm going to take a lecture from you.
We're summing up on the motion here.
Yeah. But he did. Yeah.
Yeah,
Councillor Brown, but on that there, we're happy to accept the amendment, so and we hope work is achieved there before the end of the year, so that something can be done for the budget coming through in February.
Okay, thank you. Everybody in agreement with the motion?
For the amended motion.
Yeah. Everybody agreement with the amendment? And Councillor Andrews seconded it?
Yeah.
So we're in full agreement. Okay. Mm-hmm. So we'll move on now to notice of motion received from Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Riley.
Mr. Mayor, I believe that anyone who watched the recent Spotlight programme on the circumstances surrounding the conviction of local men Eric Cullen, Cyril Cullen, the late Cyril Cullen, and George Kirkpatrick for the murder of a young Castle McWellan man called Francis Rice would agree that a miscarriage of justice has taken place. I believe this issue, with its importance and its substance, transcends religion or political allegiances. A person being deprived of their liberty for a crime they did not commit is in itself a truly horrific act. I know from talking to the living victims of this miscarriage of justice that it had a terrible impact on the families of those involved. I realise that some people might suggest that this issue could be subject to the Stormont House review terms, but this issue has already been subject to the historic inquiries team, along with other incidents that took place in this area that have proved to be really useless and pointless to the people involved and many other people who are in similar circumstances. I therefore believe that it is reasonable and indeed required that the Cullen Fitzpatrick case is subject to a full inquiry carried out either by an outside police force or by a full judgment-led inquiry if the council would agree to requesting it. In requesting this, I am in no way implying criticism of the police or the justice system, past or present, but all I am asking for is an inquiry to establish what happened on that terrible night back in 1975 in order to give peace of mind and justice, not just to the men involved in their families, but also to establish who really murdered the teenager, Mr. Francis Rice. That's it, Chairman. Thank you.
Probably Henry would be amazed to find this out, but I have to concur with what he said there in relation to the programme itself. I watched the programme and I thought from the very start that the men who were interviewed, they sounded so innocent of what the accusations that had been made against them. And the evidence against them seemed so flimsy that there wasn't... and yet they were to spend a long period of time in prison and not accept any paramilitary associations as such. Now, I have to say at the same time that the family of Francis Rice, they lost a loved one for no reason other than the fact that he was a Catholic, a nationalist, a Tag, if you want to call him that. That's the reason why his life was taken away so cruelly on that night way back in the 70s. And somebody was responsible for it. Somebody went out of the way to murder that young fella for no reason. But, you know, people from my community, if you want to call my community, the Nationalist Republican community, we are inundated with examples in the past of where innocent people have gone to jail. People like the Birmingham Six, the Guildford Four. Many, many people throughout the north of Ireland, anybody who knows anybody who's been to prison will be always touched by the number of people who come and say, I was framed, or that confession was beaten out of me, or I was stitched up. There are so many, many people in that category that when the whole thing, if it's ever settled here, there's had to be some sort of massive investigation into all the people who have served time wrongly because they weren't responsible for the so-called crimes that they have committed. Thank you, Chair.
That's right, Hannah.
Chair, I'm happy to second the motions. I know I've seen the programme on television that Councillor Howland refers to, and also I knew about it from before. After seeing especially the programme and what research I have done, I do honestly believe there is a huge question over the safety of these convictions. Now, justice is for all. There's the three men themselves from the Rice family. They all deserve the justice, and especially the young man that died, he needs justice as well. See, does that the correct people need to go to jail. If these three men are innocent, they deserve their names to be cleared. They went to jail, I think they've done 14 years, if my understanding is correct. They never admitted their guilt. They never admitted their guilt. They never went into the loyalist section of paramilitaries in the prison, so they didn't. They didn't. They maintained their innocence all the way through. On their confessions themselves, whenever you actually read what the confessions say, they do look like somebody composed them, so they did, to make them look correct, so they did. On the confessions themselves, it was highlighted in the programme, and I did read it whenever I read through all what I could find, that in the confessions they say they beat the person up, so they did, they beat Mr. Rice up, so they did. With the post-mortem said that they weren't beaten up, they were stabbed. So there's so many inconsistencies here, it's unbelievable. These three men, I believe, never were in any trouble whatsoever throughout their life until this grew up. They never had no experience with the police. Whenever they were taken into custody, so they did, whatever happened in there, they did sign confessions, which I believe were unsafe. And for a court to convict people on confessions and confessions alone is a total and utter disaster, sure it is. It's a total and utter disaster with no supporting evidence whatsoever. So I'm happy to support Henry and second the motion, Sam, and I hope, as Henry has called for, all these, this justice, if it's a miscarriage of justice, need to be put right. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor McBurney.
Thank you, Chair. Many others here, I too watch the spotlight referencing the motion, and as a resident of Castle Welland, I find it quite emotive. I can only imagine how those directly affected by it must feel, both the immediate family members and neighbours of Mr. Rice, which are still my extended family include, as well as those who felt compelled to make the documentary. However, Alliance will not be supporting the motion. As a party, we have concerns with continual calls in different quarters calling for a judge-led inquiry regarding specific matters of concern. As we see it, there's an agreed mechanism to deal comprehensively with the past. This is in the Stormont House institutions. We urge all councillors and parties to support these proposals. If indeed there's new evidence which has been unearthed, the Historic Investigations Unit should be able to hold a new investigation. Thank you.
Councillor Craig.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Chair, I'd just like to premise my remarks by saying that there's no justification for taking the life of Francis Rice as a 17-year-old youth. I have no hesitation in condemning it as murder, and the Rice family have had to carry the pain of this brutal act of taking a young life for the last 43 years. Now, sadly, the Rice family are not alone in their pain, because many other families, including Security Force families as well, have suffered due to the terror campaign of the IRA, and also those paramilitaries on the Protestant side as well. Now, in this case, none of those who went to jail were ever paramilitaries, and I think that's beyond dispute. And the only real evidence that has already been stated was their confessions, which I feel are unsound, and certainly a very senior member of the judiciary has indicated also that he feels it's unsound, so I have no hesitation, Chair, in supporting the motion. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Taylor.
Chair, thank you. The Ulster Unionist Party group will also be supporting the motion. I watched the programme myself a number of weeks ago, and it's clear that there is concerns about the safety of the convictions, and I think it's only fair that Eric Cullen, Cyril Cullen and George Kirkpatrick have those convictions reviewed. It's very difficult for anyone to go through such a circumstance, particularly if there is innocence, and it's important that they have their rights respected in this regard, and that they have their convictions reviewed. It's also a very difficult one for the Rice family, I understand, because they deserve justice as well. You know, their son, their brother, who was murdered, and it's important that they get the justice out of this as well. But certainly, you know, as I watched the programme, it was, you know, very detailed. It gave a very, you know, detailed account of where things are, and I certainly would have no hesitation in supporting the motion, along with my party colleagues.
Okay. Councillor Stokes.
Yeah, Chair, our party will be supporting the motion, Chair.
Councillor Clark.
Chair, Sinn Féin, we're very conscious that the recent publicity and speculation around the convictions of the individual sentenced for the murder of Francis Rice has re-traumatised members of the Rice family. their 11 victims of the murder. His sole focus was and remains the pursuit of justice for the murder of their loved one. And I remember the time of the sentencing that I was friends with Sean Rice at school, and I saw firsthand the pain that the family were going through at that particular time. There's one shift in opinion today or tonight is in regards to the unionist parties, that they are now saying that there is corruption in the RUC and the security forces, allegations of falsifying documents, coercion to get signing of statements, beatings to get statements. And there's thousands of people who went through the judicial process and have experienced beatings for 7 days in detention interrogation centres, and statements beat out of individuals with no other evidence to back up the convictions. So I think this is new ground, that unions are now stating that there was collusion in regards to some convictions. And I do think that's new ground that we're on in regards to that. It's a bit bizarre that the proposer of the motion is saying that he's not blaming the RUC or any of the detectives. They were great people. So I would like to know who, from the proposer, who falsified these documents then. Was it the solicitors or who was it? So it's a bit bizarre, that part of the discussion. We are, as I said, we're also aware that there are serious miscarriages of justice have occurred in the north during the conflict. And as I said, there was, through the use of torture and treatment, to force bogus confessions by RUC personnel. Any serious allegations of this nature should be investigated and were required, submitted for due judicial process. So I suppose in concluding, if there's strong evidence is being provided in regards to any miscarriage of justice, that evidence should be provided and due process should take place.
And I think that's everyone. Henry, can you seem to be fairly much
thanks very much, and thanks everyone for their contributions. I'll just say to Davey, you know, the Birmingham section of Guildford 4, they went through a traumatic time, but they were declared innocent as a result of people supporting them. And in the case of the police or the judge, I'm not casting aspersions on anybody, but if an inquiry did reveal that any police officer or any member of the judiciary or whatever had acted illegally, he should be jailed. And that should go for any person, regardless of political affiliation, religion or background. If an officer of the law breaks the law himself, then he should be subject to the law. I've no argument with that whatsoever. But I would say to Willie that I don't believe that there was corruption or collusion or whatever widespread within the police, because there was hundreds of loyalists locked up, thousands of loyalists that were locked up during the Troubles. And in terms of the interview technique that Willie was talking about, if you think about what the difference in interviewing somebody like the UFF or the UBF or the IRA, who were schooled in interrogation techniques and who were professional terrorists, let's face it, they knew what they were at. Compare that and that technique of interrogation being used on men who had absolutely no paramilitary experience, who had never been schooled in how to resist an interrogation. So I think that's the difference, and that's why, partly why this came about. But I'm very grateful to everybody, and as I said, I feel really sorry for that Rice family also, and you know, it's terrible that people are being re-traumatised from the events of the past, but there is a feeling that the person who actually done this is known and was a knife fanatic and could be identified. And the less said about that, the better now, but I would like to see justice prevail. Thank you very much, Chairman.
Okay. Everybody in agreement with the motion? Okay, we'll move on then to notice of motion received from Councillor Casey.
Thanks, Chair. This is around the current welfare fiasco that's ongoing at the moment. This council supports the Right to Work, Right to Welfare Group's people proposal aim at introducing a simple but vital checklist for social security decision makers. This council supports the aim of a right to the permanent secretary for the Department of Communities calling for the issuing of guidance to all decision makers, requiring them to ensure that both due process and impact assessments are undertaken and fully complied within the decision-making process. Chair, at the moment, social security decision-making is not human rights compliant. Financial sanctions are issued almost on a random basis, and this causes stress and hardship to people who are already vulnerable. The introduction of universal credit is the biggest change to social security in a generation. It has currently been rolled out here in the north on an area-by-area basis. The rollout in England and Scotland has proven controversial, with people having to wait many weeks before they are paid. This in turn has a knock-on effect in that people are having to use food banks to get them through this difficult period. If implemented, the people's proposal would guarantee basic due process and mandatory impact assessments before decisions are made to stop or reduce a person's income. The UN Committee on Rights of People with Disability has condemned the record of the UK government, including the devolved administrations on disability. The current social security decision making has an adverse effect on children's well-being. The Department of Communities do not monitor the impact of sanctions on dependent children, despite obligations to do so under the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child. As the Department of Communities does not provide information on numbers of individual claimants being sanctioned, it is not possible to find out the number of children directly impacted on. Here in the North, child poverty levels have continued to increase, with approximately 120,000 children living in poverty. If a proposal approval was adopted, it would have a significant and positive impact on levels of poverty, mental illness and homelessness, which are all linked to welfare cuts and benefit sanctions. These administrative proposals can be introduced without the need for legislative or regulatory amendments. Finally, it needs to be stressed that it is proven time and time again that sanctions on people's benefit do not work and simply cause even more hardship to people who are already finding it difficult to survive financially on a day-to-day basis. Thank you, Chair.
Right, thank you, Councillor Rowan. Councillor Brown, well, Charlie, can you turn your light off, please? Councillor Brown?
I was going to second that, but it's already been taken, so I'll just say that I thank the councillor for bringing this forward, and I fully support it. I know from personal work, from casework, just how subjective a lot of the PIP assessments and so on can be, and how important it is to have proper protections put back into the system for vulnerable people, and just how little the current system gives regard to safeguarding for vulnerable people. I genuinely believe that everyone has a right to state support, and the current welfare system is completely and inherently flawed. And shame on Westminster for bringing in such a punitive and cruel welfare system. And I thank the councillor again for bringing this forward.
Councillor Andrews. Thanks so much, Chair. As a councillor, I would do a lot of work with a lot of constituents in relation to the recent changes in social security. We've seen the rollout of PIPs. It's had a detrimental effect and impact on many in our society who need help the most. You know, I do agree with the assessments process. I think the appeals process is very intimidating. You think it was like you were in front of a kangaroo court, and the way that people are under stress, even in the assessment centre, a lot of people are stressed out, people crying and all. And in relation to universal credit, that is going to have a dire effect on many who need help, especially with the requirements of
just enrolling by online, whatever. But I think myself, we do need to look at the whole process. In fact, in England and Wales, in due course, the Department of Work and Pensions are going to have to go through at least 1.6 million cases of PIPs due to mental health not being considered. And at the moment, the department is using procedures and law which are illegal. But I do agree with the sentiments expressed in the motion, and something has to be done now rather than later.
Councillor Devlin.
Thank you very much, Chair. We in the SDLP fully support and welcome this motion. Just last week, we've seen universal credit being introduced into Newcastle, and only time will tell the fallout of that part of welfare reform in my area, but I am fearing the worst. It's important that we do remember tonight that these statistics that people quote are actually people's lives, and that the personal stories of sanctions need to always be considered. In a lot of cases, people actually only find out that they've been sanctioned when they attempt to withdraw cash from a cash machine. Then they have to try and ascertain why they've been sanctioned and what the next steps are. Thrown into all of this, you have claimants with mental health issues, some of which have minimal literacy, making the whole situation even more daunting and fearful. I mean, we in the SDLP have been steadfast in our support to the vulnerable and those in need by way of our attempts of making the Welfare Reform Bill fit for purpose. All of our party's work is on record on this issue, and we will continue to represent people in the most compassionate way that we can. But again, Chair, I do have to point out the actual irony, yet again, of Sinn Féin bringing a motion to this council on welfare. And yet again, I'd like to repeat, it's a crying shame that when they, like others, have the opportunity to shape our welfare system in the way that welfare laws should be reformed on the floor of the Assembly, unfortunately they buckled under the pressure. And just by way of a reminder, I know some people do like to rewrite history or attempt to do that, Sinn Féin and the DUP handed all powers to legislate for welfare to a Tory government, who they must entrust it wholeheartedly to look after these vulnerable people. So yet again, another Sinn Féin motion which smacks of cheap political point scoring, because if they really want to assist, they could have and would have and also had the power to do so. And to bring motions forward on welfare claiming to represent the vulnerable is completely disingenuous, Chair.
Councillor Craig.
Yes, thank you, Chair. We in the DUP will be happy to support Councillor Casey's motion. Certainly from our contacts on the ground, there are a number of people contacting us and they certainly need support and guidance. So we have no difficulty in supporting the motion.
Councillor Taylor.
Chair, this party group are very happy to support the motion. You know, I know from personal experience there's a lot of trauma been experienced by constituents in terms of this process. You know, I know myself, I assisted a constituent a number of weeks ago. She sat through the process for a full hour, then received a call this week to say she needed to go through another interview process because I hadn't got enough information. And that's just not good enough. You know, people have been traumatised enough by this, and to have to go through that sort of situation again, just it's not acceptable. But there's all sorts of problems, and there's a list of problems we could all go through tonight, so I've certainly no hesitation, and neither do my party colleagues, in supporting the motion. I thank the proposer for bringing it forward to the council.
Thank you. Back over to you, Charlie, to sum up, please.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It has to be said it was the group, Right to Work, Right to Welfare group, that asked us to bring forward this motion. And I'm grateful for those who did speak in favour of it, even with what Councillor Devlin said. And just for the record, one of her esteemed colleagues actually voted to fast-track welfare reform through the Assembly without any discussion. Thankfully, some of our people were awake to actually stop it in its tracks. Thank you, Chair.
Can I come back to the point of information?
A point of information,
Chair.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think if Councillor Casey just sort of interest, Chair, who are you referring to? Pardon? Okay, so I do want to come on that point. I think actually Charlie tried to allege to throw that point at me the last time that we discussed welfare in this chamber. The former MP, it's a point of information, Councillor Ram. The former MP did try to introduce welfare reform under a Labour government, which is completely and utterly different. And we're all for reforming the welfare system. There's nothing wrong with that, but it has to be done in the right format. Under a Tory government, you're going to get a completely different. And we're dealing with that now. We're dealing with that now.
No, this is laughable. This is getting beyond the joke. I mean, some of the statement that Councillor came out with the last time really sickened me. It wasn't recorded in any notice here or any papers. When she said that, welfare reform, everybody knows somebody who's bucking the system. I don't know anybody who's bucking the system. Anybody who I know is on welfare, getting welfare benefits, on it because they deserve it.
I think everybody's in agreement then on the motion. Yeah? Right, thank you. So move now to notice the motion received from Councillors Taylor, McCauley and Burgess.
Okay, yep, thank you. Saturday the 19th of May 2018 was a very special day for many across the globe. Some may say it started like any
order,
other.
Please.
Some may say that it started like any other sunny Saturday morning, but this is no standard day in our house, as I was awakened at the crack of dawn by my daughter jumping on the bed with exhilaration that it was her 11th birthday and wondering would she get a birthday card from the royal couple as they shared her special day. On that same morning, the morning of the long-awaited royal wedding, we awoke to the following news that the Queen has today been pleased to confer a dukedom on Prince Henry of Wales, his titles to be Duke of Sussex, Earl of Dumbarton and Baron Kilkeel. Prince Harry thus becomes His Royal Highness the Duke of Sussex, and Miss Meghan Markle on marriage will become Her Royal Highness the Duke of Sussex. Prince Harry becomes the very first Baron of Kilkeel, as this has never previously been granted as a royal title. The full title and designation of the barony is Baron Kilkeel of Kilkeel in the county of Down. Prior to now, there has never been a noble title connected to Kilkeel. Home of Northern Ireland's largest fishing fleet, Kilkeel, from the Irish meaning Church of the Nile, lies within the historic barony of Mourne. This barony was newly created to allow Prince Harry to hold a Northern Irish title. As local councillor representing the Mourne's DEA, I share the immense pride and excitement that this title brings for our local community in the Kingdom of Mourne. It is a wonderful opportunity for Mourne, and indeed the whole district. After such positive coverage of the royal couple on their wedding day throughout the world, it is great that the town of Kilkeel is highlighted to the world stage. The wedding itself was a wonderful spectacle and reflected all that is good about the inclusiveness and diversity of the United Kingdom and its esteemed and changing monarchy. It was a time for much celebration, and parties were held all over our council area throughout that week to mark the occasion, not least the mad tea party in my back garden that afternoon with 8 excitable 11-year-old girls just wishing that they could snap up a royal prince of their own someday, just like Meghan. Regardless of this romantic notion, the royal family boosts the British economy by £1.8 billion due to tourism, trade and media. Kilkeel to date being famed for fishing, farming and granite, as well as manufacturing a large number of the world's first class and business class aircraft seats, can only benefit from this great news. A visit from the newly married royal couple to this beautiful part of Northern Ireland will be a fantastic boost for our area and its people, not to mention the future unique opportunities that this new royal title can potentially bring for our district, alongside our own council's tourism strategy. So Prince Harry and Meghan will certainly get a very warm welcome. Therefore, on behalf of my Ulster Unionist Party colleagues and I, on Newry, Mourne and Down District Council, we would like to offer our warmest congratulations to the Duke and Duchess of Sussex on their marriage and wish them a long life of fulfilment, blessed to enjoy many happy years together. We also welcome the recognition of our district in conferring of their titles, Baron and Baroness Kilkeel, upon the occasion of their marriage, and the new royal couple would be warmly received during a visit to our wonderful district. Thank you.
Thank you. Councillor Hannah.
Chair, I'll be able to second that. Anyway, I was going to second it, no matter. First of all, Chair, the DUP group would like to extend our hearty good wishes to Meghan and Harry and their future married life together, the human beings who they are. And to be quite honest with you, life throws up many challenges, and we do wish them thoroughly to have a long and happy marriage together. On Baron Kilkeel, first of all, as a true Kilkeel man, I was born in Kilkeel Hospital, so I was. I lived most of my life in Kilkeel. On that morning, whenever I discovered that we had a new Baron, and it was Baron Kilkeel, to be quite honest, I was extremely proud, so I was. To be honoured with that, and hopefully in the future we'll be honoured with a visit and possibly yourself would be there to welcome him as chair of the council, our Gripen would be delighted to see him come. So would and come many times to one of the most beautiful areas in this country, council area and in Northern Ireland. Well, Warren Point, I'm not commenting now. But in saying that there, Kilkeel will benefit in many ways from this. Firstly, I read somewhere that, I can't remember the number just off the top of my head, that many times it was Googled where Kilkeel was. I think Kilkeel's on the map now, and to be quite honest with you, it will bring all sorts of opportunities, and I hope Marie Ward's listening. She should be putting that into her strategy, so she should, with the tourist strategy, so she would, to highlight that. The other thing is, I hope they buy a holiday home in Kilkeel. I heard tell of them looking at one, so I did. So, no, Prince Harry. Marie would sort of know Kilkeel, so she would. But in saying that, I hope to come, and it comes to him, and Henry, myself, and I don't know about Brian while you're waiting, and Jill will definitely welcome him as well, and Megan, and we look forward to a visit in the very near future. Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn, and I can put it in record, I'd be very happy to receive him. Councillor Stokes.
Yeah, Chair, our party's policy on this will be quite clear. We believe the best form of government for any country is that of a democratic republic. We are not constitutional monarchists. That said, Chair, we do recognise that our unionist family members, our unionist friends and our neighbours, many of them do cherish the British royal family. And on that basis, Chair, our party will be supporting the motion. Thank you.
Councillor Riley.
Thanks very much, Chairman. Yes, I welcome the notice of motion. And it was a tremendous visual opportunity to see the royal wedding. And I would like to ask you, what can the council do to utilise the opportunities that could flow from this event of Prince Harry being Baron Kilkeel? We had the extraordinary opportunity of having the name Kilkeel being exposed to 2 billion people in a very positive fashion. And it was trending on Facebook and Twitter for half a day, and I'm sure the number of searches for Kilkeel must have been incredible that afternoon. And from talking to some of the people in Kilkeel, there's been a big increase in the number of visitors from within Northern Ireland and from within the Republic who are coming up to actually see this place that is now associated with the royal family. And there was one lovely family from Dublin that I was talking to at the Euroswire car park by pure chance, and they were astonished that there wasn't something already to signify this, and they had expected, you know, more. But I would like to see the town, you know, the community coming together, getting the place really well cleaned up, to get grass cut and old flags that are draping off flagpoles that are half ripped, get all that stuff away and get the town completely tidied up and get it looking its best for whenever Prince Harry and Meghan do come, which I suspect will be in the very near future. But there are opportunities that can flow from it, and I would like to see the council really pushing the boat out to take advantage of it, because it will benefit everybody. It's going to benefit tourism for the whole district, and we've got to really grasp the opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Harvey.
Okay. Well, I'd just like to say to Jill, Robert and David, an excellent motion. I was very happy when I heard your idea for it and fully support it, and I must admit I'm really looking forward to being able to do something with it, and well done. Thank you.
Councillor Quinn.
Thank you, Chair. Like I've already been said, I live on the outskirts of Kilkeel and would wish any newly married couple the best of luck in their future lives together. I would welcome Harry and Meghan to Kilkeel, because I've already referenced, it can do nothing but good for the area with regard to our tourism product. We are talking about one of the premier tourism destinations for Ireland, and we're looking for visitors from without beyond our shores. This would help encourage more visitors to come. And it has been said to me by a number of people from the Protestant community that if Harry does come to visit, we may get the roads fixed. So I would welcome them to Kilkeen.
McMurray.
Yes, Chair. I'll welcome and support the motion, mostly on the ground that if it didn't, my 91-year-old grandmother from Derry would disown me if it didn't. Well, she calls it Derry. She's Presbyterian, and I'm not going to get drawn into that debate with you, okay? So, Anyhow, lest I get distracted here, I wish Harry and Meghan all the best on their wedding on the 19th of May. Hopefully their matrimonial bliss is longer lasting than Harry's great uncle of 14 generations back, Henry the 8th, who beheaded Anne Boleyn on the same day 418 years ago. just then. I'm very conscious of the pride that those who subscribe to the constitutional mark. I have no doubt they'll be warmly received should they choose to visit our district, but I don't want to say any more in case I fall foul of the Treason Felony Act of 1848.
That's our start.
Champagne's happy enough with the first part, of the first paragraph of the motion. It's the second one that causes us the difficulties. The first part of the motion is obviously wishing Harry and Meghan all the best for the wedding, like you would do for any couple. Sorry, I've alluded to it, and we're quite happy to do that. It's that Champagne do not support the conferring of titles to British monarchy on any land in Ireland. But we do recognise, you know, it is. The royal family are very important to the unionist community. The pageantry, we all saw it on the televisions, every screen it was on, and everybody was, a lot of people were obviously very interested in it. As a Republican, I do not support the monarchy in any form. And when the wedding was on, I was watching Celtic win on 7 in a row. So over Rangers 5-0. Yeah, it was. But another thing, I suppose, I don't even think you need the second part, because obviously they are going to visit at some stage, but you'll not have to put any flags or button up because they're already up. But we'd be abstaining for the motion.
Okay, Jill, do you want to sum up?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, well, as I said in my opening line, and Willie has agreed with me that it was a very special day for many across the globe, so everybody was happy that day. everybody was pleased that day, even my 11-year-old. But royal commentators believe that the marriage of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle was a game changer for the House of Windsor. I just hope that the newly conferred titles to them will provide a game changer for the Kingdom of Mourne. I would like to thank all those who spoke in support of our party's motion tonight, and most certainly look forward to welcoming the new Baron and Baroness Kilkeel to the area in the not so distant future. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, so everyone's for the motion? Raise your hand. Anybody against?
No abstentions.
No abstentions. Yep.
Here.
Okay, the motion is carried. Okay, so now we have a notice of motion received from Councillor Brown.
Thanks, Chair.
Good to see that all your supporters have arrived.
just one, I'm afraid. One went to Newry by accident. Yeah, one went to the room. I never said that. Okay, I'd like to say at the outset that I realise that this is an incredibly sensitive and controversial issue, and I know there will be a wide range of opinions and emotions expressed on this motion.
and I want to say that I do respect and acknowledge varying opinions, and I would ask in return for a respectful and understanding debate here tonight. I will also start by saying that I'm bringing this motion in a personal capacity rather than on behalf of the Alliance Party, which maintains no position on abortion and allows all members a free vote on the issue. There is no doubt that the repeal of the 8th Amendment was a hugely significant turning point for every pro-choice person in the South, us here in the North, and women everywhere. I will refer primarily to women as the group most affected by this issue, whilst also acknowledging that there are many trans people who can also get pregnant and are denied bodily autonomy in the same way as women. The referendum result was also for them. It is not so much an issue for men, and as such, I sometimes feel it is not my place to lead on this issue. However, as someone who has always been pro-choice and an advocate for equality and rights, I am proud to introduce this motion for debate. Currently in Northern Ireland, abortion is only allowed in circumstances where a woman's life is in imminent danger or there is a probable risk of long-term physical or mental harm. Around 30 abortions were carried out in Northern Ireland on average over the last 5 years, yet around 1,000 women from here travel to England on average each year at significant personal cost to themselves, both financially and mentally. Abortion is not a problem that our draconian or archaic 19th century law has eradicated. It simply exports it. Even in the traumatic instance where a fetus has no viability outside of the womb, known as fatal abnormality, a woman cannot receive the health care and support she needs at home. With our law essentially forcing women to carry to term a child she knows will die after birth, that is cruel and inhumane in the extreme, and I am ashamed of our law in particular in this respect. Even if you are against a woman's right to choose, surely you must empathize where the woman has had her choice whether or not to raise a child already taken away through a fatal abnormality. It is no wonder then, given the current status of our law, that major human rights organizations such as the UN and Amnesty International have found the United Kingdom responsible for grave and systematic violations of women's rights in Northern Ireland by unduly restricting their access to abortion. We have by far the most restrictive abortion law in Europe and the developed world. It is more restrictive than Saudi Arabia, China, and Pakistan, three countries with some of the worst human rights records internationally. I will say at this stage quite clearly that I am not pro-abortion. I do not want abortions to happen, and I certainly do not want to see the number of abortions increase beyond the number absolutely necessary as a result of crisis pregnancies. But we cannot bury our heads in the sand and ignore the fact that abortions will happen, whether we like it or not. You can be both pro-choice and pro-life, and as a society, we must do all we can to prevent a woman reaching the point of requiring a termination. This includes, in the first instance, better sex education and provision of contraceptives. It necessitates better support for women during and post-pregnancy. It includes world-class perinatal health care, which this council has recently championed. And it also includes enhanced state financial support and services for mothers. Some of this is relevant to the welfare topic that we discussed earlier as well. And we need to empower fostering and adoption services so that that option is always there as an alternative to the traumatic experience of having an abortion. But most importantly, we need to get better at recognizing the vital social and economic contribution made by women who provide the vast majority of the time and resources involved in raising the next generation. And guys, I think we can always do better on this. Preventative measures aside, it is important that we think deeply and compassionately about the issue of abortion. When it is necessary, perhaps challenging some of the societal and ingrained opinions which we have developed over time, we need to look to both science and a better understanding of rights and how we legislate in a way that balances the rights of women and those of unborn children. This goes deep into philosophical arguments on what constitutes life, rights, and personhood, and I won't go into too much detail on that debate now, and I recognise that others here will have their own philosophical or theological views on the issue. My personal perspective is that abortion is a question of rights, and at what point does an unborn fetus's right to life come into play during a pregnancy? I do not believe that those rights are inherent from conception. I do not, however, believe that an unborn child does not have any rights during a pregnancy, and believe that these rights come into play once the fetus has developed the capacity to experience pain, and that after that point, the law should grant rights to the fetus to protect it from any suffering. This is a view consistent with utilitarian philosophy and the position that human rights exist to protect us all from preventable pain or suffering. Having established a philosophical foundation for rights, we must then look to science on the issue of fetal development. And anyone who does research from unbiased, peer-reviewed, expert-backed sources will find that there is no legitimate scientific information that supports the statement that a fetus experiences pain before 26 weeks. My personal view is that we should allow a large margin of error to avoid any possible risk of pain or suffering by disallowing abortion in any circumstances aside from FFA or the risk of death to the mother beyond 20 weeks. This safely predates the fetal development of the central nervous system and the brain cortex responsible for enabling us to experience pain. However, I realise this is still too long for many people, and have offered this motion calling for a 12-week limit as a compromise. I do not necessarily agree with the full extent of the 67 Act, particularly with regard to disability, and therefore acknowledge the need for our own unique law in Northern Ireland. It's important to point out that the vast majority of abortions on the NHS are carried out within 9 weeks of a person becoming pregnant. The particular circumstances of the pregnant person or how the pregnancy came about are irrelevant. The idea that abortion could be allowed in cases of sexual crime but not in others is not just ignorant on the question of human rights and near impossible to legislate for fairly, but also implies that if a woman becomes pregnant accidentally, regardless of the circumstances, she should be forced to live with the consequences. This attitude of forced birthing is abhorrent and nothing more than a patriarchal policing of sexual ethics by the state, more than often led by men who will never have to deal with a crisis pregnancy themselves. I genuinely do not believe anyone willingly wants to have an abortion as a lazy form of contraception, and I completely reject the term abortion on demand. These terms are unsympathetic and dismissive of the emotional trauma and stress that a woman goes through when requiring an abortion. Although we cannot enact legislative change here in local government, by passing this motion we will send a message that Northern Ireland is no longer willing to be a socially conservative backwater and the only place in these islands with abortion laws that contravene basic human rights. Whilst the Republic has undergone a seismic socio-economic shift in recent decades, endorsing abortion reform and LGBT rights by popular vote, becoming the fastest growing European economy, embracing an outward-looking cosmopolitan culture, and playing a leading role in the EU, Northern Ireland has never been a less appealing place for those who wish to live in a progressive and modern society. Abortion law reform is a vital step on that path to progress, and I hope you will all support this motion tonight.
Councillor Kim, do you second the motion? Or?
No.
No. Do we have a seconder for the motion? Yeah, it's Councillor McMurray the same. Councillor Kim.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Councillor Brown, for all your comments before. I just want to point out, I think it's very interesting that looking around the room on an issue about abortion, that I'm actually the only woman speaking on it. So just wanted to point that out, because I see there's quite a lot of lights on and not one woman is speaking on it. I will acknowledge that this is a very sensitive issue for many, including myself, and therefore, as Councillor Brown has previously stated, respectful discussion is essential. You know, and it is important for any speakers to think about the people that have to make these decisions, regardless of what your own views are. This is not a debate on the morality of abortion. I don't know anybody who thinks it's a good thing. As a young woman myself, and at that age of my friends having children, etc., you know, I don't think anybody has ever said to me, abortion is something we want. Nobody wants an abortion, but sometimes women face difficult circumstances and choose to have one. Nobody is being asked here to change their own minds on this issue. We are simply asking for the right to make up our own. Women are treated like criminals in the current legislation for having to make tough and heartbreaking decisions. It's wrong to criminalise women who choose to have an abortion. It's also wrong to criminalise those healthcare professionals who have a duty to care for vulnerable patients. The decision to have a termination is not something anyone aspires to. It is also never a decision which is taken lightly. However, unfortunately, it's a reality some women have to face. Those women should be supported and not ostracised. In cases of fetal abnormalities, rape and many other cases, which we've heard lots of examples over the last number of weeks and months leading up to the referendum. Next week, Sinn Féin members from across the 32 counties of Ireland will be going to Ardes to discuss the recent results from the referendum in the South and agree as a party our policy on legislative reform and decriminalisation of abortion. With that said, I would therefore propose to amend Councillor Brown's motion as follows. That this Council acknowledges the yes vote in the Republic of Ireland to repeal the Eighth Amendment and believes that full information and non-directive pregnancy counselling embodying all choices should be freely available to women, and calls for a compassionate, human rights-compliant approach to healthcare, acknowledging women should have access to safe and appropriate healthcare, and thus endorses legislative reform and decriminalisation of abortion. Thank you.
Councillor Brown, do you accept the amendment?
Yes.
Councillor Savage.
Yes, sir. When I'm a Democrat and fully respect the democratic will of the people of the Republic in their decision to repeal the Eighth Amendment of the Irish Constitution, I personally can't welcome it. I, like all my SDLP colleagues in this council chamber, including the colleagues who are unable to be with us tonight, I'm pro-life and I'm happy to speak up for the unborn child. I fully understand the need to legislate for the difficult and extreme cases relating to what has been termed fetal-fatal abnormality, and I fully recognise the need to show real compassion for all women who find themselves in the trauma of a crisis pregnancy. I believe there are two lives to be considered, and compassion must be shown for both the mother and the unborn child. I care compassionately for both. Chair, I personally would have been on the no side of the debate in the South, and my reasons for taking that position have been played out in the media and the political arena since the referendum result was announced. What concerned me personally prior to the vote was not the removal of the Eighth Amendment. I fully understand the impediment it has been to those entrusted with dealing with very complex and difficult issues, namely those within the medical profession and legal profession in regards to cases where fetal-fatal abnormality and other crisis issues have been involved. But with the heads of bill in relation to the forthcoming abortion legislation that will follow the referendum result. I've heard political leaders who agonised over the decision before declaring their position, such as Fianna Fáil leader Micheál Martin, talk about reluctant yes and reluctant no voters. This points to the fact that many people in the South voted yes in the understanding that the removal of the Eighth would lead to the removal of the legal impediments in these difficult cases, not an opening of the door to abortion on demand. If the removal of the Eighth Amendment was aimed purely at removing the legal impediments in the extreme and difficult cases, then I may have been persuaded to become one of the reluctant yes voters. However, what we have ended up with, however, is those who have driven the yes campaign using the size of the majority as a license to demand a fast-track approach to abortion on demand within 12 weeks. That is what I saw coming, and that is why I advocated a no vote. I, like my party colleagues in this chamber, do not and never will support abortion on demand. The SDLP, contrary to some media interpretations, is and has been from its inception a pro-life party. And Chair, I want to assure you that all our party and all our party supporters out there, that the SDLP councillors that represent them in Newry Moore and Down are unapologetically pro-life. We are pro-life with a compassionate understanding of the need to ensure that women who find themselves in the trauma of a crisis pregnancy are given all the medical, emotional, legal and practical support they need. A number of weeks ago, Chair, I was happy to participate in the debate and support a motion around the need for a perinatal hospice in Northern Ireland and for improved perinatal services. I'm delighted that this Council supported that motion overwhelmingly. As a father of a son born at 25 and a half weeks gestation, who, and his mother in my eyes, is a living miracle, I saw at first hand the real need for improved perinatal care and support for parents of children with life-limiting conditions. Every parent we met in that difficult journey 20 years ago, some of those whose children passed on, all said they would never have traded those precious moments they had with their child. I believe we should be taking steps to fund and enhance perinatal care and wraparound services for women who find themselves faced with the trauma of a crisis pregnancy in Northern Ireland, rather than advocating abortion on demand. Sure, the wording of Councillor Brown's motion echoes the sentiments of the Yes campaigners, and I have outlined earlier who are now seizing the size of the margin of victory as a motivation to legislate for abortion on demand. It echoes the sentiments that were etched on makeshift banners in the centre of Dublin in the aftermath of the result that said the North is next.
Chair, this is a very sensitive and emotive issue, one I believe that needs mature and measured thinking, not knee-jerk reactions and slogan-making. It is one that needs to be dealt with at a legislative level beyond this chamber, and I would question the motivation behind bringing such an emotive and potentially divisive issue to the floor of this chamber. This issue needs a functioning executive that listens to the needs of mothers in crisis pregnancies and to medical and legal professionals who can guide our legislators to come up with the legislation that can deal compassionately with the difficult cases. It requires legislation that shows compassion for both the mother and the unborn child, not abortion on demand. So I leave this motion as advocating abortion on demand, and I, along with the SDLP colleagues, Nuria Moore and Down, all of whom are pro-life, will be voting against the motion, Chair.
Okay, Councillor, can I remind you, the amendment has now been accepted, so we're talking on the amendment. Councillor Harvey.
Firstly, this council does not welcome the overwhelming yes vote in the Republic. And the very thought of people cheering the end of life of our precious children is something I will never be able to understand, let alone accept. The words free, safe and legal, in my mind, does in no way make it right. At the last full council on Tuesday 8th of May, I had the privilege of bringing a motion to this council where both lives matter. I called for a special facility to be provided to care for our mothers-to-be and their unborn children in the most difficult of circumstances. We were all touched at Councillor Savage's experience and the difficult time he came through. Friends, real health care does not end a life that has begun. Our women and our children are worth oh so much more to us than this and deserve better. We could not possibly support this motion. Thank you.
Councillor Sharpton.
Thank you very much, Chair. And as it's been mentioned previously, it is an extremely emotional and personal matter, and one that I haven't experienced, and I could never imagine the pain that those women that choose to have an abortion are going through. I do respect the democratic decision that Ireland took in the referendum, but I have no knowledge or from research of the Council in Ireland announcing a stance that they held before the referendum took place. So why would we as a council decide to have one stance view that would not reflect all the views of the council area? Today at Westminster we have MPs debating abortion for Northern Ireland, and many areas of Northern Ireland not having a voice at all at that debate. If the MLAs of Northern Ireland truly care about the women of this country and those of the unborn, now is the time to get back to working at the Assembly and carrying out that review that was agreed, and if needed, bring it to the people of Northern Ireland to ask their opinion of such an extremely emotional and personal matter. I did have issues with the wording of the original motion, which I'm glad to see that there has been an accepted amendment to, because the original motion to me read as if it was abortion on demand. I do respect that Councillor Brown did try and clarify that. Chair, I would ask that if Councillor Kimmins could reread her amendment at some point, just to ensure that we are all fully buffet with the details that was read out before we go to the vote.
Councillor Taylor.
Yes, mate. I'm surprised by the lack of nuance from Councillor Brown in taking this motion to council. He is advocating unfettered abortion up to 12 weeks, with nothing in the motion, or indeed, might I believe, in nothing in the amendment either, to recognise any protection for the unborn up to 12 weeks. This, in fact, really is social abortion we're talking about. I am a pro-life public representative, and given the wide debate which has taken place all over the island in the past number of months, particularly around those most sensitive of situations for women, Councillor Brown has shown a lack of respect to everyone concerned. This is a pro-death motion, in that it would mirror the British system, which is totally abominable, uncaring, and is out of control. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. Chair,
stating the obvious, obviously, and it has been mentioned already that, you know, that this is a very emotive issue and people have held very strong strong views on it. But I certainly believe that in bringing the motion here tonight, and I know we're mentioning about the amendment as well, I do believe it was ill-advised and it was a knee-jerk reaction to what occurred in the Republic of Ireland regarding the vote. And I think it was an attempt to jump on the bandwagon. It's an issue that needs a very mature discussion. It's an issue that should be discussed if we have a devolved assembly at that assembly. But certainly, from my point of view, as a matter of personal conscience, I couldn't support this because I take a position of pro-life, and I certainly would feel deeply uncomfortable with what has been suggested, what lies ahead down south. So, so my personal conscience dictates that I couldn't support this. Thank you.
Councillor Craig.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Chairman, I recognise that there are sensitivities around this subject, and therefore, how did I say, I'll take recognition of that. Those who voted no in the Republic of Ireland and those who hold to that view here in Northern Ireland have been labelled unsympathetic, repressive, and we heard it tonight, a backwater, a Victorian. But the right to life is something that should never change. I just remind people, councillors tonight, what the 8th Amendment actually stated. The state acknowledges the right to life of the unborn, and with due regard to the equal right to life of the mother, guarantees in its laws to respect, and as far as practical, by its laws to defend and vindicate that right. Now, in the wake of the yes vote to repeal that law, the government in the Republic of Ireland is proposing to legislate to permit abortion in cases where there's a risk to the life of the mother, and which I agree with on that specific point, rape, medical emergency, or fetal abnormality, or up to 12 weeks without justification. And I could just need to underline that again, up to 12 weeks without justification. That's the major difficulty I have. That, to me, is really abortion on demand, irrespective of what Councillor Brown states. So the government in the South will be proposing unrestricted access to abortion up to 12 weeks. Chairman, I believe in the dignity and value of every human life. It is a scientific fact that life begins at conception, and it is our role as a society to, at the very least, ensure everyone is allowed to live, especially the most vulnerable amongst us. Invariably, the unborn child is referred to as a fetus in the early stages of its development, but that is to depersonalise the child in the womb, which is a human baby. As a modern and progressive society, we should seek ways to help women in all pregnancies, whatever the circumstances, whether it is practically, emotionally, or financially. We need to promote a culture of support and love for all. So, Mr. Chairman, my stance is not negative or repressive, but positive and supportive. I want to protect the lives of both the unborn child and the mother. Now, I recognise, as a man, I could never enter into the trauma of a woman who suffers rape, and then to discover that she is pregnant as a result of that rape. But there's an old saying that hard cases, and yes, that is a hard case, that hard cases make bad laws, and certainly it is a very bad law to allow wholesale abortion because of the small percentage of rape victims. In 2016, it's estimated that the overwhelming number of abortions in England, Scotland and Wales were carried out for socio-economic reasons. I feel it's very disingenuous for the pro-choice lobby to use these extreme cases for a wholesale change in the law. In my own family, one of a family friend, she had, and I don't like using the term fetal abnormality, but she had two pregnancies where the baby, where it had genes, etc., that weren't compatible with life, but she carried those babies through to full term. One of them lived a few hours, and the other one lived a few days. And then she was blessed later on with three healthy children. And I believe she's been rewarded for that, and that's the sort of care. She was offered an abortion, she refused. Much emphasis has been placed on the woman's rights and her right to choose. but the unborn baby is another life. It is a life in its own right, and we need to protect the right to life of the most vulnerable in our society. Human right to life is a fundamental issue here. And I was very encouraged to hear Alwyn McGuinness on Radio at Lunchtime today, making that very point. That's why, Mr. Chairman, I cannot accept this motion, and I represent the views of my party colleagues in the DUP. I also reject the myth being propounded that the DUP leadership is out of touch with its electorate on this issue. And I would just finally ask Councillor Byrne just to respect my legitimately held view on this issue. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Craig. Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairman, Councillor Brown's speech could have been written by George Soros on the Open Society. Councillor Brown suggests that us protecting the unborn child makes us less tolerant than China, Pakistan, or Saudi Arabia. Does Councillor Brown really suggest that we should emulate the society in those countries by gunning women to death who are caught smoking marijuana, or throw a woman off a high building for being gay, or behead it for insulting their husbands? I don't think that's the sort of society we want. All we want to do is protect the unborn. The debate in the Republic, in many ways, and I get this more and more from listening to radio programs and reading the Southern Press, it was a vote against past mispractice of the Catholic Church in regards to children and how young people were handled in years gone by. And people were lashing out against the state and its establishment. But now we are seeing the Dáil bringing forward legislation to assist euthanasia in ending human life on request. And the Irish government is now also suggesting and considering that Down syndrome babies should be terminated. I hate that word, terminated, to take a life. It's also as though the liberal agenda in the Republic has been really played out in the extreme. And there was one post on Facebook during that referendum in the South that really struck me, and it was from a young guy called Adrian Murphy. And he said, if there's an unwanted organism growing inside a human that's draining their resources and relying on its host to stay alive, then yes, it's a parasite. If it's diagnosed in time, it can be removed. If not, it becomes a person, burdening the parent for the next 18 years legally. I think there was loads of young people like that. But, Chairman, if all this legislation is enacted as the Fianna Gael are proposing and the coalition down there are proposing, we will have a situation in the Republic where the lives of frogs spawn in a swamp or salmon spawn in a pool in a river will have more legal protection than a human fetus. And anyone who willfully interferes with salmon spawn or frog spawn in that state in a pond will be subject to a custodial sentence, while anybody will be able to kill a baby, a perfectly healthy baby and a perfectly healthy woman, for up to 12 weeks, unconditional, no questions asked. I just think it's terrible that society has got to that stage, and I know that so many people, good Catholic people, good Christian people in the South, the abuse that some of those people have taken for holding a pro-life opinion, I think it will come back on those people in a very strong fashion. And I'm really pleased to see the SDLP, Unionists and DUP and myself sticking together here tonight on behalf of the unborn. Thank you.
Councillor Carr.
Thank you, Chairman. And I will not be supporting this motion, nor do I think we should be debating it in this forum tonight. I, like my party, I'm a committed pro-life supporter. This motion is more about the needs of an egotistical Councillor Brown than it is about the rights and wrongs of abortion. This craving for publicity and abuse of social media in attaching photos of individual councillors is offensive. Councillor Brown asked his 3,968 friends on Facebook to write to councillors asking them to support this motion. As a result, I can tell you I got two emails asking me to support the motion and got four not to support it. Coincidentally, 66% or 2-1 against. If Councillor Brown truly wanted this motion to pass, surely he should have first sought a seconder, gone out and even talked to his fellow councillors. But no, not Patrick. Better get a half page in the local paper and a big campaign on Facebook. Maybe now he will read some of the very genuine pro-life comments on his page. This councillor does not welcome the overwhelming vote in the Republic. In fact, I'm embarrassed by it. Nor do I believe that writing to Mrs. May will make one bit of difference. The life of an unborn baby should be protected, and abortion on demand should continue to be against our laws. Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor. Mr. Andrews, thanks so much, Chair. You know, I do agree to a certain extent that if Patrick has said this motion is sensitive, and I agree it is very sensitive. You know, but there's been a whole lot of debate before and after the recent referendum, and even today in Westminster, a debate's ongoing in relation to the reform of legislation. I've done a lot of soul searching. I go to Lourdes every year. I see so many people of all ages who are so ill, who are in stretchers, they're in wheelchairs, and their loved ones, and the people who care so much for them diligently. It's definitely touched me so much. I think I'm bad, but whenever I see that there, I thank God that I'm able to do what I can. To me personally, life is life. From the moment of conception to the moment that we draw our last breath, we should have that chance of life. I'm using my voice tonight for so many who cannot speak or shout out for their cause and for their rights. So I will not be supporting the motion whatsoever. Councillor Devlin.
Sure, I appreciate it's been a long night, but could we request a 10-minute recess, please? In light of the content of the amendment, we wouldn't mind discussing it among our group.
Yeah, that's fine, yeah. Is all happy enough with that? Yeah.
Okay. We'll come back at 10 to 9.
10 to 9. Take your seats, please.
I think your conversation with them.
So if I maybe mention it, I'm doing the other before every view that you have of this subject.
Squeeze in. Okay, councillors. Councillor McMurray.
I will be brief. I just want to pass a mark on the fact that this is such a nuanced subject, you know, and listening to some of the speakers this evening. I just wanted to pass one remark really on the motion passed previously, and I understand totally the convictions of councillors Harvey and Savage and Craig and the respectful conversation they've had with them interim and all the rest of it. But you know, there was media platform pieces done regarding that motion that you know didn't deal with the tangible issues that we were supporting in that motion. And I just noticed that some people have brought up, you know, by jumping on bandwagons, and you know, I just think that the tangible stuff that was done in that motion, the platform pieces that were written subsequently were on strap lines regarding that and actually didn't deal with the tangible motion. So it's just that it's such a nuanced subject, and it's very, very important that all perspectives are respected, and I support the motion and also the amendment that Councillor Kimmins has addressed as well. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Fitzpatrick.
Okay, as a pro-life party, we cannot support the amendment due to the vagueness of the wording. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, Councillor Kimmins, can you read the amendment out again, please, for us?
So this council acknowledges the yes vote in the South of Ireland to repeal the Eighth Amendment. believes that full information and non-directive pregnancy counselling embodying all choices should be freely available to women, and calls for a compassionate, human rights compliant approach to healthcare, acknowledging women should have access to safe and appropriate healthcare, and thus endorses legislative reform and decriminalisation of abortion.
Okay. Councillor Brown, would you like to sum up?
Yes, thanks.
Councillor Kemmins, can you turn the light off?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I'm disappointed with some of the comments around here. I think mostly they were probably respectful, and I thank all members for their contributions where they were. I would point out to Councillor Taylor, I'm not jumping on any bandwagon here. I've been consistently pro-choice for all the time I've been in politics and before. This isn't opportunism. This is an issue I genuinely care about, so I hope you'll take it in that respect. To Councillors McAteer and Councillor Carr, I found your comments very personal in nature. I don't think they were necessary. I think your own comments betrayed maybe an ignorance on the topic and a lack of reading around the issue. My speech did have a significant amount of nuance in it, so it's disappointing of that. I'd also point out to Councillor Carr that I shared a link to all councillors' addresses. Just so happens when you share that link, apparently you're first alphabetically and your photo comes up. I would take that up with the council whenever that happens, but that wasn't my doing. That is just how it is. And Councillor Craig, I do respect your personal views, and I would hope that you would respect mine on this issue as well. Sorry, Councillor Andrews? No, because it... because it starts with crop leave, DEA, and then Councillor Carr's first alphabetically. So as I say, I'm disappointed perhaps this motion didn't get the support that I was hoping for, but I'm glad that we had a discussion about it. I think it's a very important issue that needs to be brought forward in any public forum possible. I thank Councillor Kimmins for her amendment. I'm disappointed the SDLP won't be able to support it because I think it's a perfectly fair motion. But thank you anyway for your contributions.
Okay, councillors, can we go to a vote then? On the amended motion.
Recorded vote.
Councillor Andrews. Councillor Bailey, absent. Councillor Brown. Councillor Burgess. Councillor Byrne, absent. Councillor Carr. Councillor Casey, absent. Councillor William Clark. Councillor Craig. Councillor Curran. Councillor Devlin. Councillor Dorn, absent. Councillor Enright, absent. Councillor Fitzpatrick. Councillor Hannah. Councillor Hart, absent. Councillor Harvey. Councillor Hurty, absent. Councillor Howell. Councillor Highland, absent. Councillor Kimmins. Councillor Larkin. Councillor Loughran. Councillor McCauley. Councillor McAteer.
Against.
Councillor McMahon. Councillor McMurray. Councillor McGrew, absent. Councillor Mernon.
Against.
Councillor O'Murray. Councillor Quinn. Councillor Riley. Councillor Rice. Councillor Rowan. Councillor Savage. Councillor Sharvin. Councillor Stokes. Councillor Taylor. Councillor Tinley. Absent. Councillor Traynor. Absent. Councillor Walker. Absent.
Okay, the motion is lost. 4-10-19 against.
Okay, folks, that's us for the end of the meeting.
Chairman. Chairman.
Yeah, Henry.
Chairman, I never got a chance to congratulate you on becoming chair. And could I just ask you one thing, that if there are events within a councillor's ward, would you maybe consider inviting the councillors along? Because it does include people in the, you know, what's going on in society. It's something that's been neglected in the new council.
Thank you very much, Henry.
I'm going to go to the next one.